Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order for the Goleta Planning Commission for today, January 25th. And if you could all stand and join me in a pledge of allegiance. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much. You can all have your seats. And if I could get our clerk to do our roll call for us.
Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Fuller.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Vice Chair Jenkins.
Here.
Chair Onan.
Here.
Thank you.
So we will go to public forum. And just to confirm here, if I do have one speaker slip, it says for item one, Maruja?
Yeah, it's for the zoning.
For the zoning, okay. So we'll come back to you at later. I don't see anyone else who's filed the speaker slip for the public forum, which of course gives the public a right to speak to anything that is in the jurisdiction of the city of Goleta that's not on tonight's agenda. So seeing no one go to that, we'll come out of the public forum and we'll look for amendments or adjustments to the agenda.
There are none this evening.
All right. So administrative agenda, our first item is the minutes. Madam Clerk, if you'd read those for us.
The Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of January 11th, 2016.
Okay, so because our minutes are pretty in-depth this time. I'm anticipating some commentary on those. So before I call for a motion, let me ask, does anybody have any comments or suggested revisions to the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jenkins?
On page 7, under the 17.03.060, that's calling out B2, and then that actually should be C1. And I have a suggestion because it goes on in that same paragraph, and our discussion was talking about mezzanines as they relate to the building code section 505. And then we went on and discussed C2, right after C1, and we talked about the room heights, 25 feet counting as two stories, and then I asked for staff to give us a clarification on theater heights. So my suggestion is to alter this first paragraph to say C1 after the section title, strike measuring the height of a building and so it would read section 505 with regard to mezzanines, period. And then I would add an additional section afterwards that would be 17.03.060C2, and you can phrase it any way you like. Vice Chair Jenkins asked for clarification regarding 25-foot ceiling height counting as two stories, specifically how it would affect a theater. And then on the same page, second paragraph from the bottom is 17.03.130C, and that is in actuality, it's 17.03.150C. And Mr. Chair, those are my only suggested changes.
All right. Ms. Maynard?
I had one on page 6, 17.02.020, H and I. And I guess I wanted to say, I know there was some dialogue about whether H and I in that section needed to be phrased as that for legal protection. And I wanted to note that one of the things that I brought up is I'd like clarity of that language to the extent feasible while not putting us at legal risk. But I think there might be some way to use plainer language and still meet our legal needs. And so I'm hoping staff could look into if that would be possible. And I'd like that noted.
So just for the sake of the minutes right now, if we can stick to the minutes. So on this one, on the 1702020, what was it you wanted?
It was H and I. It said staff will provide an example of clarification at the next meeting. But Commissioner Maynard raised a concern about the complexity of the language.
Okay, so we're adding that line about the complexity of the language.
Yes.
Okay, have we got that?
And then I had another one. Oh, no, I don't. Okay. Yeah, I think I got that.
Mr. Fuller, anything? No? Mr. Daniels, I'll come back to you.
Okay. No.
No.
I just had one other question on process. This is one of the times where we've really gone into depth about what public comment, what came forward in public comment. There's some good language here. Will the public, when they have a chance to come forward, be able to mention if they think that we didn't capture them well in any way? So I know Cecilia Brown and Dr. Cox, who are also still in the room today, are also quoted here. Can they mention in public comment if we caught anything wrong there?
Well, they, I mean, they certainly would have the opportunity either in public comment, I mean, in their scheduled public comment. Of course, that would have meant they would have had to read through the minutes to catch anything. but sure. Should that occur, of course, that opportunity exists.
Thank you for that clarification.
All right. So I think we've got, unless there's anything else, we can entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes from our last meeting of January 11th.
I would so move as amended.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It looks like we have unanimous approval of those meeting minutes. All right. So now we're going to go back to staff with our public workshop agenda. And who's leading us off? Ms. Wells, are you opening this up for us?
Yes. First, I wanted to say good evening. This is our second workshop, and we're moving on to parts 2 and 3 tonight. So we have a sort of lengthy presentation for you, so you can really start to digest what's in parts 2 and 3. As you can see, the agenda is to review those parts and then talk about some key issues. Get your feedback on key issues, and then talk about next steps. You'll see in your agenda packet that you have the last attachment is a detailed schedule. And so I just wanted to make sure to highlight that detailed schedule. We'll talk about it a little bit at the very end, but people will be tired. So I just wanted to make sure that you see that we lay out the Planning Commission workshop schedule with the purpose for each workshop, subject to change, of course. And we also talk, it also includes the 3 open houses that have been announced, and that there's Spanish interpretation that will be included at those at the open houses. And then just an announcement about GaletaZoning.com. There's a ton of information on GaletaZoning.com, and so we encourage people to continue to use that as a resource and also to sign up for eBlast. And we have some project contacts on that last attachment to your staff report, including Sylvia Uribe, who's helping us with Spanish translation and Spanish interpretation. So we have her contact information in there as well, in case if you know someone who speaks Spanish and would prefer to speak in Spanish and ask some questions, she can get the right information to the Spanish-speaking community. So I'm going to turn over the presentation to Martha Miller, our consultant from RRM, and we're going to go through these in depth. If you have questions along the way, as always, don't hesitate. We have the full team here, staff team. So we have Lisa Prossy and Jennifer Kerman, and we have Andy Newkirk over there in the corner, who's got who's been doing a lot of legwork, and of course, Wendy Winkler is here too. She pretty much knows everything about everything. So we're here to help you and hopefully get some good comments tonight on some key issues. And with that, Martha, I'll let you guide
me. You're welcome. Thank you. So I'll just go through a quick summary of parts 1 and 2 of the draft zoning ordinance, but really try and keep that brief to save time for the discussion of the key issues, and then we'll close with the next steps. And again, just to start out, to remind us why we're here and why the city undertook this effort was to really comprehensively update the zoning ordinance to bring it in line with your general plan and to also help realize the community's vision for the future in a way that really speaks to Goleta and is easier to use, understand, incorporate a lot of the interpretations, the technical fixes that staff has been kind of dealing with as they've used the zoning code for a number of years. And overall, bring clarity to the process so that it's clear, people understand what the regulations are, and they're enforceable. So last meeting, we went over part one, which was the general provisions, and now we're moving into part two, which is the base zoning district standards, and then part three, the overlay districts. And the base zoning districts are the really are designed to provide a virtually one-to-one relationship with your general plan land use designations. So as you go through, you can see the connection between the zoning districts and what they implement as far as the general plan land use, because your general plan does have a lot of very prescriptive standards and some clear direction for what should happen in certain areas. So the zoning is really designed to follow that. And again, if you, with the updated zoning map, comparing that to the general plan land use designation, you'll see a pretty close correlation between the two. So the base zoning districts, so part two, the base zoning districts, these are the use regulations and the development standards that apply specifically in the individual districts. Later, we'll get into overall regulations that apply citywide, but these are the ones that are tailored to the specific areas, and including residential, commercial, office, industrial, public and quasi-public, open space and agricultural districts, and planned development districts. So I'll start with residential districts, but each one of the sets of districts are really designed to be organized similarly, where they start out with the purpose statements of what the intended idea of the district is, again, really in line with the general plan, and then it goes into use regulations and development standards. So the residential districts include the single family, planned residential, residential medium density, residential high density, and mobile home park. So again, they start out with the purpose statements, which gives kind of a general idea of the purpose of the residential districts, and then gives some specific purposes of each individual district. And then there's a table of land use regulations, and included in your staff report package is a table that compares land uses in the general plan, identified in the general plan for each land use designation, to the corresponding how it would be in the zoning ordinance. So this is a real good guide to see kind of where that direction came from for allowed uses, because the zoning needs to be consistent with the general plan. So that's included for reference. One of the things with the land use regulations tables is, whereas now you have sort of an exhausted kind of list of uses of text, and you're kind of going through page by page for that, the idea behind putting them in a table is to have an easy reference point for that. So it's organized by table with the permit requirement for it. And we put the groups of districts together so you can see kind of the difference of what's allowed in one district versus another. So if somebody, say they want to locate group residential, they can see by looking at the table which districts they're looking for, rather than paging through all the districts and trying to match it up. So the use of the tables and the cross-references to other standards are really designed to make it easier to navigate what's allowed. So the category for if things are allowed are, they'd be either permitted through an administrative use permit, or permitted through a conditional use permit, or not allowed. So permitted is allowed without a discretionary permit. So that is, they say, called allowed by right. You have to meet all the standards in the zoning ordinance, but there's no public hearing required. That's for permitted uses. For an administrative use permit, that requires public notice and hearing before the zoning administrator. The zoning administrator may also elevate that decision to the Planning Commission if there's a previous approval that went before the Planning Commission, if there's controversy, if there's enough interest for that, the zoning administrator can elevate that decision. And then the conditional use permit requires public notice and hearing before the Planning Commission. So those are the kind of levels. The development regulations are also organized in a table and are, it might be my papers. I have too many. I'll try not to move. So the development regulations are, where possible, organized within a table. And then there's supplemental standards that follow. And those are usually ones that require more description, more text description. And wherever possible, again, the direction's taken from the general plan. And the general plan does articulate density, lot coverage, and height standards. So those are taken directly from the general plan. For residential districts, there's lot and density standards, building form and location standards. There's some regulations that apply to all residential districts, paving, allowances for efficiency units, some standards for garages. And then there's some regulations that apply to single family and planned residential districts, some that apply to the residential medium density and high density districts, and then some that are tailored toward the mobile home park district. Commercial district, here are the individual commercial districts, including the regional commercial, community commercial, old town, visitor serving commercial, intersection commercial, and general commercial. And again, including the purpose statements, both general to commercial, and then as well as specific for each individual district, and the table of allowed uses, the land use regulations. And then followed by the development regulations specific to each of the commercial districts, which in some cases, there's different categories for commercial versus residential, and as well as industrial and open space, just by the nature of the type of development and what you're looking at. So this, the commercial districts, in addition to your basic lot area, coverage, height, and setbacks, you'll have things that relate to building design, ground floor transparency, some of these things where we're looking at creating some more active and public interaction. Then moving on to the office districts, including business park and office institutional. Again, the land use tables, followed by the development regulations. Not typically an office, and when we get to industrial, typically not as fine-grained development standards, because this is where you're really looking at fostering an office or, in the case of industrial, supporting the industrial environment. The industrial districts include service industrial and general industrial, similar format, again, following the direction in the general plan for the land uses, as well as the development standards. And one of the, there's transition standards in all, I believe, just about all of the districts. So when we're in an area between, you know, residential and commercial, or residential and industrial, or there's transition standards to make sure that where there is that interface of two kind of different districts, that we're making sure there's some compatibility there, and particularly industrial having some additional setback requirements when you're adjacent to residential. The public and quasi-public district, for things typically such as hospitals, things of more a public nature. What I did want to mention is getting back to your comment about the theaters and how the stories relate, if you notice in the development regulations tables, they don't have story limitations. The story limitations are primarily on hospitals, I think, is the only place for that. So they just have an overall height requirement, and that's in the commercial district. In a public and quasi-public district, typically less fine-grained development standards, but again, making sure that we get the transition between the districts down. But because of the nature of these kind of public uses, they're really kind of have specific needs or different types that there doesn't tend to be development standards that really kind of apply to all. So the individual development standards are looser, but you're still paying attention to the transition between the districts. And finally, open space and agriculture, which are pretty specific kind of districts really tailored to certain types of uses and certain types of development. And really taking cues again from the general plan. The planned development district is a district where somebody can apply for, and it a rezoning is required, but what it is where it provides some flexibility. And they're really designed for where you have some coordinated development, typically on a larger scale, that conventional zoning may not be the best fit for it. But someone's coming forward with a project that provides some mix of uses or something that makes that creative development integrated, comprehensive, that the city could consider having tailored development standards for that. So that's what the planned development district provides for. It has special review. A rezoning is required, so it does go through Planning Commission as well as the City Council. And then the standards and the regulations for that project are set through that approval. So that's really a specific approval. And one of the required findings is that development is superior to what would occur under the base zoning district standard. So it allows some flexibility, but you have to say that this is a better project that we would get otherwise. Part three is the overlay districts, and there's five of them, and I'll go through them quickly. The Airport Environs Overlay District really regulates land uses within the airport influence area, and it's consistent with the adopted airport land use plan. And some questions will have been, well, how does this correspond to the draft land use plan that they're currently working on? And the answer is that this reflects the currently adopted one, the one that's in place. When the draft is completed and that gets adopted, then this would have to be looked at to make sure there's some consistency with that. But we're always going with what's in place at the time, and that's what's adopted today. So this is not with the draft land use plan that they're working on. This reflects the adopted one, the one that's in place. The Affordable Housing Overlay District is, it was set in your general plan, so this carries that forward. The Hospital Overlay Zone was also in your general plan, and that carries that forward. And these are the standards directly out of the general plan for additional allowances for Hospital Overlay Zone. The Master Plan Overlay District, there isn't any areas map right now that currently have this. This is in the ordinance as an enabling ordinance. So if the city were to desire to proactively apply this overlay district somewhere, that would require that any development that would happen there has to be consistent with a master plan. So it's kind of looking and saying, you know, this is an area where if before some development happens, we need a master plan and need to look at take a comprehensive look at it.
So just a quick question on that one. So does that, in essence, replace the specific plan?
No, you're still able to do a specific plan.
Would we, in this new zoning regulation, have specific plan then? I mean, if you have a master plan overlay district, would you still have a specific plan?
You could. There are certain state regulations pertaining to specifics that can be in specific plans, and those operate as a subset to your zoning regulations.
Okay.
This is a little different in that specific plans are, you know, per the government code, have some specific requirements for it. It's very specific. So this has some of the same ideas, but it's not where you have to follow the government code for it. And then finally, the Old Town Heritage Overlay District, which really is for guiding development in Old Town, and having it be making sure that it's consistent with the goals and objectives of the Heritage District guidelines. The guidelines did have just a couple things that were standard oriented, so we moved that into the development standards, which are the buildings built at the property line along Hollister frontage, and buildings longer than 50 feet in length have to have some articulation. They're in here, but they're not new. They're they reflect what's already in the Heritage District guidelines. So just making sure we have all the standards together in one place. So that's my overview of part two and part three. And
I wanted to add that when we put parts two and three together, we spent a lot of time with the information that we learned from the modules, and then of course we used information that's in our current zoning. And if you look back in the long table in the back of the binder of the general plan or the new zoning proposed zoning ordinance, there's tables that compare what those standards are currently and what might be if we were to adopt this one. So we use that as a kind of a thumb something to compare to as a lot of our city is built out. So we were careful about looking at setbacks and trying to make sure that with our new kind of consolidated and simplified, not oversimplified, but tailored to just the city of Goleta rather than the unincorporated county, that we weren't missing anything in the process. That doesn't mean that we're sure we got 100% right, but we spent a lot of time cross-referencing and checking and making site visits to try to get these standards as accurate as possible. And with that, I'll end staff presentation.
So let me ask you a question. The wrap-up document that you provided for us, which I guess in some ways is reflective of the minutes, is there anything that you wanted to address in that wrap-up document? And maybe you can tell us how you intend for this document to follow the process.
Right, so we're using the minutes as our documentation that and a tool for our meetings of more of a kind of a word, not word for word, but it's a factual representation of what was discussed at the meeting. The wrap-ups are kind of kept capturing the highlights of the content and also responding to data requests where there were data requests from the commission. So we'll continue to keep track of them and later use them as tools when we're repackaging a public draft, a new version of the draft that goes to hearings, to kind of track and let you know that this is what we heard from you and this is how we responded to your requests. So we're in the process of doing that. We take your comments and then we work as a group after each meeting and integrate them in. We're working on our own like track change to put in comments from the commissioners so that we don't lose the context from the meeting, so we do it right away. After each meeting and before each meeting, we were just proofing the wrap-up and the minutes from the last time as we integrated it into an electronic version, including comments we get from the public. So that's the process that we're doing each time we have a meeting so that we don't lose anything, and that if we have proposed changes based on input, we can let you know how we didn't did or didn't make a recommendation on a change.
Go ahead, Kate.
So two questions. One, you mentioned that you're working on a track change version. At the end of the process, will we see the track change version to see exactly what was changed?
Yes, you'll see two versions, one with the track changes and then one without.
Thank you very much. And then I had one other one. This was captured in the meeting minutes, but I didn't see it here on page 2. I'd like to see 1701040D. We talked about there was the zoning administrator and when they would evaluate changes, and I think we decided that that would be discussed in administration permits, but I was hoping it might say as described in administration permits or under certain conditions to be described later. I was hoping there'd be some language to catch that. So it was like in 1701040D, and there wasn't a mention of that here. So we didn't define the characteristics yet, but we said we'd come back to that later. And I was hoping that in that section we'd say please refer to the administration permit section or something along those lines.
The benefit of having a clerk is Ms. Gregory will get that comment in the minutes for this meeting, so we'll have it tracked. Thanks.
I appreciate that.
Okay, so if there are any other questions on the staff's presentation, then my intention is if you have questions specifically on that presentation, then we'll go to public comment after that. And then we're going to come back and work through the document, much like we did last week. We have about the same number. We got 60-some pages to go through again tonight. So it's not dissimilar from what we did last time. And we'll talk about maybe a little bit of a setup to how we can approach that. But any questions of staff? Mr. Davis, yes or no?
No questions. I'd like to hear from the public, please.
Great. So I'll call the public up. And tonight, as far as you're speaking, you'll have the opportunity to comment on Part 2 and Part 3. Anything in these records that you wanted to comment about, whether it was the minutes or the wrap-up notes, you're welcome to make those as well. I'm going to invite you up one at a time, as we normally do. I'm going to allow 3 minutes, and because I've already been have talked to some of the members that there may be some additional time needed, I will allow that based on what you're presenting to us. So that is at my discretion that we understand that. I'll call the first speaker up and the second speaker right behind them. So our first speaker, Maruja, and followed by Dr. Ingeborg Cox.
Hello. Thank you, planning commissioners, city staff, and the public for being here to take part in an exciting and very important process for the city of Goleta. My name is Maruja Clince, and I'm here representing Suzanne Elledge Planning and Permitting Services. City staff has been working on the draft zoning ordinance with diligence to bring this much-anticipated document to its citizens, also bringing the acknowledgement of sensitive areas and issues such as growth, development, and other environmental and cultural concerns. The following is a sampling of some of our comments in the draft residential and commercial zones. In Table 17.07.020 under the RM zone, it states that detached SFRs are not allowed, but in the RM zone description, it states that detached SFRs are allowed. There is no mention of accessory structures such as guest houses, artist studios, pools, cabanas, etc. in the residential zone section. A reference to Section 17.25.020 should be noted, as it discusses accessory uses but not structures. There is no mention that residential development would be subject to DRB review and approval, and this requirement is noted in the commercial zone district. There is no mention of parking requirements within the residential zone section with the exception of the efficiency units, so a reference to Section 17.39 should be provided there or further discuss, you know, parking requirements within the context of residential. In Section 17.07.040, additional development regulations for RS and RP zones, it includes standards that should apply to those developments that contain five or more units. However, the RS zone does not allow multi-unit dwellings according to its description. We have additional comments and questions regarding the residential and commercial draft zone districts, but cannot make them all within the 3-minute time frame of public comment. We have yet to review office, industrial, public, open space, plan development, overlay districts, but would like the opportunity to do so with greater detail, as we have done with the previous two. Based on our initial review of the proposed zones, we'd like to suggest that the City Planning Commission consider either the creation of a small working group or hosting a focused workshop that can assist with the final proofing and of these details in the draft zoning ordinance. It is understood that staff and the Commission's time is indeed valuable, and many pending projects and other items are awaiting their review before the Commission. However, the draft zoning ordinance contains a lot of information that should be carefully digested and analyzed by city staff, decision makers, and their constituents. We, having represented a dozen of projects since the city's incorporation, would like the opportunity for dialogue with staff and the decision makers. Now is the time to work out inconsistencies and address these types of comments before the city adopts the ordinance and the job becomes even more difficult. A standing working group or additional focus workshop would provide the public with an opportunity to have a dialogue in a transparent manner that can be part of the public record and could assist in processing and adoption of the zoning code. And that's basically it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Okay, our next speaker, Dr. Ingeborg Cox, followed by Barbara Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. On Chapter 17.11020, if a specific land use is not defined, it should not be up to the director to assign the land use or the activity to a classification. On number 26, reduced setbacks, a zero-yard setback should not be allowed in the city of Goleta. On 2-6016, the rear setback may be reduced to 15 feet if the rear yard abuts a permanently dedicated open space. But what is not addressed is what happens if the rear yard abuts both a residence and a permanently dedicated open space. 3-2, airport clear zones. It states the following zones are not permitted within an airport clear zone. You mentioned it, but we don't know where these airport clear zones are. There is no map provided to refer to that doesn't say go to page such and such. This needs to be provided for the public to understand what we're talking about. I went a little bit further, and on 17.31.110 on lagoon protection, would you please add that no discharges of chemical water are allowed into ESHAs and into the lagoons that were mentioned on this chapter? On chapter 1731 ESHAs, 1731-010, please mention all the ESHAs in Goleta. You only mentioned the Goleta Slough and the Deborah Slough, which are, Deborah Slough is partially here. But please mention Bell Canyon Creek because it's an ESHA that needs to be mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Barbara Massey, followed by Reverend Doug Miller.
Good evening. Since I only have 3 minutes to comment on 65 pages of ordinance, I'll hit the high points. The director should not be assigning the land uses and activities to undefined lands in any district. That should be the council's responsibility. This wording should be removed from the pages 2-2, 2-33, 2-39, and 2-44. On page 2-5, table 17.07.030, under setbacks, the words also see section 17.25.190 should be added. This is a regulation regarding truck docks, loading, and service areas. Under 216, timeshares should only be permitted with a conditional use permit. No, 219. This is going into commercial now. No project in the city of Goleta should be allowed to go to 65 feet and or 50% lot coverage. Staff has said this only applies to Rincon Palms and the Marriott, but those are already approved at 35 feet, with one peak at 35 feet. Sorry. This would approve a new height limit, which they could ask for since they haven't been built, and is also open to Beccaro under visitor-serving properties. There is also the potential for redevelopment, rebuilding, and possibly rezoning into the visitor-serving commercial, which would open up a 65-foot-high building or more in the city of Goleta. The height limit should be at 35 feet. This is Goleta, not a suburb of L.A. And this should be removed from the document. Service areas under 224-G, service areas should replace a proper wording from the docks and loading areas, section 1725-190. They should also be, that same dock and loading and service area should be placed in the industrial area also. There should be no exception to the 10-foot separation between buildings and parking in industrial areas. There should be a note under additional regulations in agricultural zones that greenhouses are limited to 10% of lot coverage. And finally, 3.10, all boundary changes or modifications to master plans should go to the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Doug Miller, followed by Cecilia Brown.
Chair, commissioners and staff, thank you for the tremendous work you've done on this project. I represent the Santa Barbara Clergy Association. And as we discovered, that religious institutions are under the category of community assemblies. Our concern is that these community assemblies are somewhat limited. We appreciate the fact that they're also in residential districts, but we'd like to also see them in industrial districts. There are a lot of congregations now that rent warehouses for their services, and we would like to see that as a possibility. The other thing, I was a little confused about the language. It talks about public assemblies, public and semi-public and semi and quasi-public. I couldn't find how those are distinguished. Our main concern is that when looking ahead, that religious institutions are limited on the time that they can worship. In your ordinance, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. This is very onerous to many congregations who want to have, for instance, an Easter sunrise service, or want to have a retreat or a late Bible study or other kinds of late programs. A few years ago when they built the Greek Orthodox Church over on San Antonio Creek Road, the county put in many, many onerous conditions and restrictions, including they couldn't worship after 10 p.m. They took it to courts. The court struck down those ordinances as an egregious violation of the separation of church and state. In fact, the courts even chastised the county at the time for putting these kind of restrictions. So we're very concerned about that this restriction will not be put on. Also, I noticed that there's this single room occupancy. I'm not sure what that's all about. That's been added since I was here last time. We'd also like to see group residentials allowed in residential areas. And that's very important for us. I'm also working with people without homes, and we would like to see homes in residential areas that are possibilities for group experiences, group residentials. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cecilia Brown.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and commissioners, and thanks to staff for all their work. I know it's a lot of detail in this, and mine's going to be fairly easy tonight. A question on excuse me, on page 2-6 on paving, where the maximum amount of paving the front and side yards is 50%. The reason I bring this up, I have a neighbor who I thought was going to be paving over their front yard, and I was kind of freaking out about this because I didn't think it really reflected what should be in a neighborhood. So I was glad to see this. But I have some other questions about this. So the paving, is it permeable? Is it impermeable? Is there going to be a requirement for landscaping or some sort of covering over that area which is not paved or have impermeable materials? And I think I'd appreciate to see some clarity on that, because another case in my neighborhood where people had completed construction and there was just dirt in the front yard with weeds grown over, and someone called the zoning enforcement officer and he says, no, you see, it's covered. There are weeds growing there. So I think there needs to be, I mean, these are these kind of silly things. But for some of it's important, because just having plain dirt in your neighborhood isn't really any good. It's wind blows and dust goes. And so I would appreciate seeing some information about the requirement for landscaping and something a little bit more detailed about this paving, whether it's permeable or impermeable or how much it can be of whichever. My other question, I have a couple others, and this is about the setbacks for community assembly facilities in residential neighborhoods. If you look at, in my neighborhood, the setbacks are huge from the adjacent neighborhoods. They're 100 feet, I don't know, quite large. And here the maximum is 25 feet. And I'm just wondering why it's so limited, why it's so small, because these community assembly facilities can be up to 35 feet. So you'd have 25 foot limited on the house and 35 next door. And it just kind of doesn't seem like it would be compatible to having something so close. That's a building of the size, bulk, and scale that the community assembly facilities are. So I'd appreciate if you'd look at that. And I have the question also that Ms. Massey had about the maximum allowable structure height may increase to 65 feet for hotels in visitor-serving commercial district. And I know that Ms. Carmen told me where these were, but I looked at some maps, and I just don't see where these the visitor-serving commercial districts, where exactly these hotels are. And the reason I'm asking about this, because if they're on Hollister, their view shed requirements to meet some of the visual resource policies. So if they're along Hollister, it doesn't seem to me like it's going to be consistent to having structures of that height meeting the general plan policies. In the commercial portion, it seems to me that there were some architectural and design standards for commercial projects in the general plan, and I didn't see that being carried forward into the commercial section. And I didn't know whether in the other districts whether there were standards in the general plan that needed to be carried forward either. I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to read all that. But my last question has to do with, in the table, the land use, there's a lot of documentation here. This is from the general plan, in table 2-4, it lists the public and quasi-public uses, and it gives names like general government administration, fire stations, schools, public and private, other government facilities, other uses, religious institutions, daycare facilities, wireless and communication facilities. Yet in part of the discussion about describing these, which occurs later, you won't get there yet, in chapter 17.7020, there are many more types of uses, like cemeteries, more detailing about hospitals and clinics with skilled nursing facilities, parking, public and private. And I was wondering how did this morph into what was described in the general plan to all those other uses described in chapter 17.70? Those are my questions, and I thank you.
Thank you. All right, our last speaker, Linda Blackburn.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Linda Blackburn. I'm with the Topes Group. I'm not going to be going into all the details of the comments I have on the draft zoning ordinance. It's a lot to go through in 3 minutes. But I did want to say that the process is moving very quickly. And I know it was brought up at the last meeting about the outreach and the public outreach. I was notified about 3 times about this meeting tonight. So I do want to let you know that the outreach is working and in various forms, whether it's electronic mailers, as well as just the standard public noticing. So, you know, I did want to say that I recently reached out to staff regarding a particular use, which is assisted living. We have a few different senior projects along the Central Coast, and you know, I wanted to get an understanding as to how the City of Goleta processes assisted living type of developments. As you know, we're having a ever-growing senior population in all throughout California, and when I would pose the question as to what the zone would be for the assisted living right now and for the new zoning ordinance, I understand that right now it's allowed in every zone under a conditional use permit, except for the PI zone, which it's just a permitted use. However, in the new zoning ordinance, I understand now that it is only allowed as a conditional use in the general commercial zone as a mixed-use project. So, you know, I just wanted to bring this up as just one of the examples of some of the things that we would really want to take a look at as far as the different uses that are outlined in there. And, you know, I don't know what kind of ramifications this might have to some of the existing assisted living facilities we have now. I don't know if any of those are in a general commercial zone. They may be. I don't know. But I do want to ask that staff consider staff and the Planning Commission consider those, as well as the timing of this process. This is a lot of information to digest. I know that staff in the beginning did the modules, and we had a conversation with staff. But I do want to, you know, point out that with good intentions, staff is trying to get us involved and trying to get, you know, stakeholder meetings as well as hold these public workshops and, you know, another one on Wednesday. But there may be a little bit of misguided haste in pushing this forward and going a little too fast with this process. It's, you know, basically the local constitutional document. I think that we should really take some time to have some transparency to go through and have these discussions out in the public rather than individually in separate meetings. So those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So just a reminder to the public that's watching, and a thank you to all you folks who've appeared here tonight. Written comments are welcome as well, especially some of you who have submitted pretty detailed commentary about specific numbered paragraphs within the ordinance. That would always be beneficial to submit those to staff in a written format. I think staff spoke to us last meeting saying that they are available for consultations or meetings with anyone from the public to make sure, again, that your comments and the specificity of this, because that's the nature of this document that we're working with, they have an opportunity to discuss that and get down to that level. So that is available and will continue to be available during the process. And we thank everybody for taking their time and spending the effort to come to us prepared and give us those detailed comments, because that's what will make this ordinance outstanding through this process. Now, I'd like to go back to staff and see if you would like to respond or comment on anything during the public comment period, and then we're coming back to the commission to get to our work. Staff, do you have anything for us?
Yeah, first I'd like to say that I can tell that the public has been doing their homework, and we're impressed and appreciate your input, and we're all writing our notes and typing our notes, and have a lot to think about, and we appreciate that. And we look forward to having one-on-one time with you at the open house to clarify things. And I don't think that that's a transparency issue. I think that it's helpful for us to go back and forth so we can better understand what the comments are and sometimes guide the speaker to the page in the general plan and then get to the right pages in the zoning ordinance. And that's what we're hoping that our open house format, which is going to be informal with stations, with staff at each station that is ready to talk into whatever level of detail that the public wants on specific issues. So then these meetings, I think, we're getting your comments. We'll take them however we can get them. But we do encourage the stakeholder meetings because they give us a chance to really have that back and forth with a group, and think it would be really effective. Written comments also are great because it gives staff a chance to pour over them and come prepared. And it also is helpful because the commissioners will get copies of the letters as well. More specifically to respond, there was a lot of things that we could go over and I could respond to, a lot of things that are in different places in the zoning ordinance. So I'm really encouraging people to go to the open house so that we can talk more specifically, so we can all guide you in to those specific sections in the regulations. I think the director may have some follow-up.
Just to address a few of the comments that we heard during public comment, first and foremost, Chapter 1770, I think will be beneficial to a number of people in the audience or people who are watching at home. This is our use classification section. It does define the uses that are mentioned throughout the code. So SROs or single room occupancy, that's defined in this section. And the code is actually developed so someone can go back and forth when you have a question about the table and it's a general use and you're like, well, what's included in residential care facilities? It goes into great detail about what could be under that definition. Back to the question about the 65-foot height. That is a leftover item from the module process when the Page site, which is now has been entitled as Old Town Village, was being looked at for a number of years as a visitor center and a conference center, and that was a desired height at that time. The existing hotel overlay does allow lot coverage to go to 50%. But I do think we will need to come back and strike this to some extent because a conference center is no longer something that will go on the Page site because that lot has been entitled with another development. So this is just a hangover from the back in the module process, even though it really wasn't that long ago. So I hope that adds some clarification to that issue.
Okay, anything from staff or from our consultant?
And again, as fast as I was trying to write, I did not catch everything. And some things I think were just comments for your consideration, but where there's some clarity, I'll try and provide it. Where there's an allowance for a reduction in setback, where you're adjacent to an open space, and the question was, well, what if you're next to open space in the residential? Well, the most restrictive applies. So you would not be allowed that that allowance. The airport clear zone is mapped on the overlay map. So that's the airport environs overlay, identifies the different zones. Greenhouses are limited to 10% lot coverage. A master plan does go to the Planning Commission as well as the City Council. So it's a high level review. Community assembly is not allowed in the industrial districts, and that's consistent with the general plan. So that is that direction on that. As far as the time limit, there is a time limit in there with allowances for additional time through a conditional use permit approval. And that is not just towards religious facilities. That's any type of community assembly type use. And so all community assembly type uses are treated the same way. So there is fairness in how they're treated. And that is because, you know, if you have loud gatherings of people or a lot of cars in traffic, that it can be a compatibility issue. It may not, but it can be. And that's why it's allowed through the conditional use permit, so that there's the extra level of review and you can treat that on a case-by-case basis. And then the paving in the front yard, so the limitation on that for residential districts, that couldn't be dealt with couple of ways, and you really think back to the what you want to get out of that standard. Some might just want to have more pervious surface. Another concern may be aesthetics. So you could flip that and say a minimum 50% of the front yard needs to be landscaped if the aesthetics as well as the stormwater. You may say a maximum of 50% or, you know, a minimum 50 needs to be pervious. You can play with that standard so you can think about what you really want to achieve through that standard, and we can modify that as appropriate.
And just to add to that, if you go to the back of the zoning ordinance and look at the definitions, it does define what pavement means.
Yeah.
In this ordinance, turf block is not included in that definition, so we would need to take a look at that standard and add additional rules to that.
Right. The assisted living, again, the intention was to be consistent with the uses in the general plan, and there's assisted living, there's also large residential care facilities, there's also skilled nursing facilities. So again, if we can meet with and understand exactly what you're looking at, and we can clarify some stuff, you may still have some comments on where these should be allowed, but I think we can provide at least some clarity and context of that. And then I would say the uses between the general plan and the zoning ordinance are not always a one-to-one correlation, because they the general plan lays out the land uses, but there are times of uses that staff's approached with or people are approached with that we need to address and have regulations on. So in this table, we tried to match the zoning uses up as close to the general plan uses as possible. Where there are some in the zoning that are not matched with the general plan, that's also included, so you can see what, you know, we weren't able to exactly match, but we still need to accommodate for. And that's all I had. I'm sure I've missed 90% of what was said, but
no,
that was my attempt.
That was terrific. And obviously, we'll sum some of that up in the wrap up.
Yeah.
In the minutes from this meeting.
Yeah.
So thank you. So now we're going to come back to the commission, and we're going to go through the document. We're going to start the same way we started the last time, page by page. We might defer you a little bit, Mr. Jenkins, and kind of go to who has some maybe a lesser number of comments. I'm not projecting that you'll have the same as last time, but a couple of things that I thought might be beneficial for us in the start, and you guys can tell me whether you find this acceptable or not. So in the global comments that we had from last meeting, you know, this title, those kind of global comments that were made that would appear throughout the document, we will accept those as being documented, noted going forward, so we don't have to call those out. That sounds like everybody's okay with that one. Any objections to that one? And of course, if you have a question whether or not that was included, certainly bring it up. We're not trying to exclude that. Then another one that we seem to have a considerable amount of are edits, grammars, and typos. So my suggestion on edits, grammar, and typos is just that we call that out. Rather than go through trying to reconstruct the language here at this time, down to that specifics, because it's rather detailed work, you know, a misrepresented word always worth the comment, so that doesn't track through the document inadvertently. But otherwise, let's not try to reconstruct the language. Let's just call up language or typo, and have him have a note to come back to that and look at how that should be better construction. Now, the language that you particularly brought up, obviously, that is worthy of more discussion than just calling it a typo or an edit, and we understand that. So are we all pretty much okay with that as a couple of the ground rules? Okay, so let's go to section 2 for our start spot. And as I said, we're going to start going through this document page by page. We have 52 pages to go through in part number two. So we'll do this as effectively as we can, but of course making sure that we get everybody's comments and recommendations. And what I'm going to move this around, and Katie, I'm going to come right to you and see if you've got any comments or anything on page one.
No, I did want to say thank you to staff for being more consistent in the zoning code than the general plan with units and people. So it was units all the way through, and I really appreciated that.
Mr. Fuller.
Good.
Page one. Mr. Daniels, page one?
No.
Mr. Jenkins, page one?
Nope.
Moving to page two. Hmm. Commissioner Maynard.
I do have a few for this one. In planned residential, in the general plan, it had a section that said clustering of residential units is encouraged where appropriate to provide efficient use of space while preserving natural, cultural, and scenic resources of a site. And I thought that was lovely language, and I don't know if that got moved to somewhere else in the zoning code, but it got left out of the description here. So I was hoping we could bring that language back from the general plan, or if it's somewhere else in the zoning code, that's fine as well. I had a comment on residential medium density. It looks like the minimum density is 13 units per net acre here, but in the general plan it's 15. And I'd like some clarification of why that was changed from 15 to 13. There's also in the general plan in residential medium density, there was some additional language about for affordable housing, this maximum density could be increased in residential medium density, but that's not described here. Maybe that's described in the affordable housing section later, but that was a change from the way that was described in the general plan, so I didn't know about that. Those were the ones that I had for this page.
All right. Mr. Fuller? Good. Mr. Daniels, anything on page two?
No comment.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just real briefly, we have RM and RH, but in the general plan, it's RMD and RHD. Little inconsistency. Do we have to worry about that, or we can have the zoning ordinance be kind of different than the general
plan? You can have it have different names.
Okay. Yeah. That's all I have.
And okay. Chair Onan, maybe before we go forward, I can respond to a couple of Commissioner Maynard's comments.
My plan is to go through a page and let you address all the comments per page. So please.
So that's kudos to you for noticing the general plan says 13. It also has a recommended standard or 15, a recommended standard, and there's a gap in the density between 13 and 15. And so we, because there are going to be cases where you have 13 or 14 or 15, we used that wording where it says recommended in the general plan so that we didn't lose the 14 units per acre from the residential zone district. So that's why we included that in there. And then the maximum density being increased in medium density residential, that's in the overlay. So that was specific to the Central Hollister corridor. So you got that one. And thank you for the comment about clustering for the planned residential. We'll take a look at that.
So one more clarification on that. So would the affordable housing be restricted to only that overlay district? Or if you had affordable housing, could you still take that increased density incentive in a non-overlay district?
That's part of the state affordable density bonus program. Okay. We have a point of debate with our legal department about putting it in here in our own language, but it is referred to, it's a state law, and anyone can take advantage of that. And you get a bonus, depending on the level of affordability, you get a density bonus and exceptions to development standards, and that can happen anywhere. But the affordable housing overlay has specific rules guiding that.
Okay, so we're going to go to the table on page three. That's the land use regulations residential districts. So we're looking for comments on this table. Mr. Daniels, anything on this table on page three? Any comments from you?
No, Chair Onan.
Mr. Fuller.
I'm good.
Ms. Maynard.
So there was some comments from the floor about assisted living facilities and having them potentially be available in more areas. I thought that was a good comment from the public, and I'd like to see that considered in the residential area. It's not listed here. One clarification, I know in the presentation you said administrative use permits, so it does go through a public posting process, but not through a hearing. So then how does it get publicly posted if it's not through a hearing?
The administrative use permit mm-hmm. does have a hearing with before the zoning administrator.
Okay. Right. Okay. And so the public can come to the hearing with the zoning administrator?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was curious why family daycare facilities were only available at small versus large. I think of a large family daycare facility, especially considering those are only 9 to 14 children. It's not a particularly large space. I'd like to see that available in RMHPs, the mobile homes. I can see a lot of families there. I was also surprised that in mobile home parks are only available by conditional use in mobile home parks. And so it seemed like that should be a P, that a mobile home park would be allowed in a mobile home park. I don't know, I'm missing something there. I'd like to see community assemblies available also in mobile home parks. I can see that's a important residential area, and I think they need community gathering spaces as much as the other residential areas. I was surprised how restrictive community gardens are and that those are all conditional use. I'd like to see those more accepted. And similar with parks and recreation facilities, I'd like to learn more about why that was had additional restrictions. There were one thing here that I didn't see, and I wasn't sure where cemeteries were allowed. And so wanted to take it's in here. I guess only in a public quasi. So we'll come back to the cemeteries later. That is my only comments here.
Mr. Jenkins?
Mr. Chair, my only question for this page is for every use that we list here, I didn't do all the cross-referencing, but do we have a definition for every use?
The use classification sections goes into great detail about what each use is. Mm-hmm. And in regards to the assisted living question, I'd really recommend looking at those definitions because there's some very specific, very fine specific mm-hmm. rules that change from residential care facility to assisted living. Mm-hmm. And it's usually involved in the structure of the apartments or living spaces and how they interrelate in the services offered. And those definitions come down typically from community care licensing, and they have those restrictions, and so we try to follow them through to here. But I cannot, I know it's a different way of using a zoning ordinance for a lot of people who are used to reading them, but the use classification section and 1770 really opens up everything that's in this document and gives you a very specific level of detail with what we're discussing and what we're talking about.
Okay. Likewise, Mr. Chair, staff, do we have definitions in the back regarding what is an administrative use permit and what is a conditional use permit?
Well, in part five, there's a whole description of what they are, the process they go through. Yeah.
I just want to be sure that, you know, I had the blinders on this week just doing these two sections. I didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of cross-referencing, so just ask. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Fuller, did you have something on page three?
I just had a question with regards to uses such as family daycare, residential care facilities, transitional housing. Doesn't the state have a number of laws that dictate where and, the degree to which we can restrict these or to where we have to allow them?
Yes.
And this, of course, zoning ordinance is subject to those state mm-hmm. laws. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right. So, staff, we'll go back to you. We had our comments on three.
Mm-hmm. So, just a couple things on the mobile home park, why mm-hmm. there's a conditional use permit required for that. And that's because, when you look at mobile home parks, they really are integrated developments where there's a lot of individual units. There typically is some common area. There's often some community facilities. And because of that and the nature of how each design is really different, mm-hmm. A lot of times that will warrant some additional review to make sure that development is, you know, cohesive and meets city objectives. With allowing community assembly, so an accessory community facility as part of that mobile home park is allowed, but community assembly is not allowed as a primary use. And one of the reasons for that is because mobile home parks are some of our important resources for affordable housing, mm-hmm. and allowing too many uses in those areas might entice other uses of those. So you're really trying to protect those areas zoned as mobile home parks for mobile home parks, whereas you may not want a community facility going in instead of. So you're right that the mm-hmm. community type uses, you know, a little community center or something to serve those residents, that's accessory to a mobile home park and would be allowed, okay. even though community assembly is a primary use. The large family daycare, why that's not included for the mobile home parks is because that is in the residence having up to 14 children. And so there's some feeling that that may not be appropriate in a typical size of a mobile home area. And then the community garden, you know, that's certainly for... you know, you to discuss. But the idea behind that is that these are areas of where more people are located, more things happening, and so making sure that the operation of that community garden is compatible with that. And if there's additional case-by-case review needed to apply additional conditions to make sure that's compatible, that's the idea behind it.
All right, Mr. Jenkins, I'll be back to you, Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Staff, under family daycare, both small and large, it seems to me under the RS designation, that should have some type of use approval. And or do we designate how close some of these family daycare centers can be close to each other? Do we have to have some set distance, you know, or can you have a cluster of homes that... You know, I would hate to live behind, not that I have a problem with little kids, I love little kids, but just, you know, they can produce a lot of noise sometimes. So anyhow, my suggestion is, at least under the RS, perhaps we should look at those being either AU or CU, and then what about proximity?
And you could look at that for the large. Per state law, you're limited in what okay. you can do with the small. So you could limit that in the large. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I forgot, one of your comments was about the park facilities. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is because the nature of parks can be different, and some people are actually sensitive to the noise of children near them or some mm-hmm. impacts of parking or park use. So, again, it's just to have that ability for mm-hmm. conditions for compatibility.
And that's not to say that a Mobile Home Parks Association could vote to use their accessory community center in their mm-hmm. Park to have a child care program. I mean, they could do that at some point, but it's not set as, like, kinder care wouldn't go into a mobile home park mm. or something mm-hmm. like a normal daycare mm-hmm. center. So that's the reasoning there. And then for the small daycares, there's state law that requires that.
Okay. Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, I think that was part of the idea, was to divide between maybe localized use of a facility as opposed to a magnet facility. If you start allowing, you know, community assembly in a mobile home park, you might end up with a large auditorium that might have rock concerts, you know, next door to a high density mobile home facility that wouldn't be very happy with that. And so limiting it from that area into a more specific zoned area might be more appropriate.
Okay.
And just on the distance for the family daycare large, so the standards for specific uses, which gets further in it, there is a requirement that there's 300 linear feet between large family daycares.
Thank you.
Okay, if I can, just a follow-up question here. Mm-hmm. and it may be worth a little discussion at this point. I think the community garden subject that was brought up by Commissioner Maynard, and we look, of course, right below at Parks and Recreation. So those facilities are all by administrative use permit. Mm-hmm. And, of course, community gardens are only in the first two categories, not in the latter. Can we talk a little bit about what the difference is in that cost and time of processing between a conditional use permit and an administrative permit? Because this kind of brings that home here, if we can, mm-hmm. if we can have some discussion of that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to lead us with this?
Well, I always like to say it, to folks that have a concern about our zoning administrator, either existing function or proposed function, there's a cost involved with coming before Planning Commission. And it's typically, I'm trying to think of the fee, but it's just over $1,000 because you have to pay for the time of the meeting and pay mm-hmm. for the room and everything else. That's in our fee system. And when you have it at a zoning level, staff time, it's typical day operation. So the costs are a lot lower. I can't say what the cost would be as part of this code because we'd have to do an evaluation of the amount of time and normal fee study to see what eventual fees would be. But doing it at a lower level is always cheaper for the consumer or for the applicant. And where places are, where applications aren't necessarily appropriate for that zoning administrator level, that's where they're elevated. You can either build that into the code. You can, the zoning administrator is never going, as a general rule, will never want to deal with something more controversial than they need to, and they will up it mm-hmm. to Planning Commission in a heartbeat. Because having a big room during public hearing is not really fun as staff when they're yelling at you, just in general. So that's something that there is a very different level of cost. And so we do have that built into the county code that we use now. There's planning director level, there's zoning administrator level, and all of those application fees are significantly cheaper than coming to the Planning Commission or having to do an appeal to City Council. And many people have actually, the appeal fees were actually a subject of City Council discussion last year because we're supposed to be doing cost recovery, and they are significant. And Council mm-hmm. struck them, I believe, by half. And they're still fairly significant. Mm-hmm. So it's something when we're looking at how the process works, the more complicated it is, the more costly to both the city and the applicant. Mm-hmm. So hence the streamlining.
If I might add, I think I heard two of you talk about community gardens, mm-hmm. Specifically about the type of authority, so either an administrative use permit or a conditional use permit mm-hmm. or permitted use in the zone. That's something that's not clarified in the general plan, so that is something that you can talk about and give us some guidance. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would support Commissioner Maynard's on looking at those, mm-hmm. that level mm-hmm. of requirement on the community garden specifically. And from a rationale, just looking at Parks and Recreation and saying it would be more onerous or more costly, that would be something that I would ask to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Fuller, saw you.
Yeah, I would just like to say that I support an administrative approval on in those zones rather than a conditional use permit. If somebody's got a problem, they can always appeal it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the appeal process is a fine process for people who do have objections. But on the other hand, I think that some of these uses for the neighbors, they might want to be heard on them. And so at least having a hearing on them is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. While we're clarifying those, just to help me understand a little bit more between the AU and the CU. So with a conditional use, it usually comes to Planning Commission. We meet at night, and there's quite a lot of public announcement about our meetings. With an AU, when would those hearings typically happen? Would they be noticed as broadly as a Planning Commission meeting? Just to help me understand when we should use AU versus CU.
Noticing is typically the same. It's the 300 feet. Mm-hmm. Depending on the issue, like currently zoning administrator hearings are sometimes held during the workday. It's like for issuing a coastal development permit for a 10-foot awning addition to a house, you know, smaller projects. There are places in our current muni code, not in the zoning ordinance, but in the municipal code, where a zoning administrator hearing would be held at night. And just because of the interest in the subject, and that was with the safe harbor overnight car parking at a church that was held in the evening, so many more people could attend that. I'm trying to think of anything else. I mean, if the zoning administrator hearings typically are business related permits, and if we did have a request from an applicant or a neighbor that with timing, we could try and work that out with them. But that would be something we'd need to look at as we would move forward with this.
Okay. I just
don't know if Ms. Miller or Ms. Wells would like to add.
Yeah, I think exactly. Typically, a zoning administrator hearing is held sometime during the day. And, yeah, you can make accommodations.
That helps a lot. So I just had two follow-ups after hearing your responses. I would like to see the family daycare large in the RMHP, an AU or a CU, rather than a not allowed at all. I'd like to have some process for potentially applying for that under a conditional situation. For the mobile home parks in an RMHP, I'd like to see that be an AU or a P instead of a CU. So a little bit more allowance, just since that is the fitting piece there. And the other ones, I think I agree with you now that I got your explanation, so thank you. And I do agree about the community garden having AU across the board.
For the large family daycare homes, I think we need to go back and check state regs on mobile home parks and just see if that would be allowed.
I appreciate you checking into that.
Yeah. You got interior and exterior space requirements for daycare that may or may not be accommodatable in a mobile home setting. All right, we're going to page number 4. Mr. Daniels, I'm going to go back to you to start us off. Any thing to note on page 4?
Negative.
Mr. Fuller?
I'm good.
Ms. Maynard?
I'm good.
Mr. Jenkins?
Nope.
Well, because there's nobody commenting on this, I'm going to... No, we'll move on to page 5. Okay, we'll go to page 5. Mr. Daniels?
Negative.
Mr. Fuller, good. Ms. Maynard, page 5.
I wanted to note for the public a difference between the zoning code and the general plan that I saw, where a maximum building height for residential high density, RH, I believe in the general plan it's 35 inland and 25 coastal, and here it's 35 both inland and coastal. And I know the community is often concerned about heights, so I wanted to flag that as a difference that I saw, if I'm reading this correctly.
Good. Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair, a couple things. Under the description for minimum lot areas, you've got, you know, RS is 20,000, or RS 12 is 12,000. The RS 43.6 is a little cumbersome. I'm just curious, and I know you're talking about an acre. I'm just curious if it wouldn't be more streamlined if you just did RS-AC or RS-A1, something that might be a little bit more shorter and to the point. And then under maximum lot coverage, I think we should add in parentheses building footprint, if that is your intent, that it's talking about. We're not talking about multiple floor calculations. We're talking about the footprint of the building. And we're also not talking about paving in this situation. We're talking about building footprints, I believe. So I think adding in parentheses there would be helpful. And then, yes.
Note there, lot coverage is defined as the portion of a lot that is covered by structures, including principal and accessory. It lists the type of structures, but not including unenclosed roof decks, landings, or balconies. It does not say multiple floors.
Okay. So all right. Great. Okay. And then under interior yard setback for RS in particular, I'm a big fan of the current method that the city is using that was adopted by the county, which is 10% of the lot width. You can go down to a minimum of 5 feet so that so long as the average setback meets the 10%. I'm in a neighborhood with a lot of lots that are 80 feet wide, all right? In this situation, and a lot of the homes on my street are two-story, by the way. In this situation, we're allowing all of these larger homes on larger lots to be 5 feet from the property line, first and second floor. That's allowing so under this, my neighbor could add a second story addition and a first floor addition to their home that's 5 feet the entire length of that building footprint, 5 feet off the property line. To me, that's not the direction we want to go. And so I really would suggest staff that you perhaps keep what we've got because it serves us well. The wider lots, 10% lot width, so I've got to have 8 feet, or I can go down to a minimum of 5 feet so long as I'm 13 feet elsewhere. So it articulates and undulates that side elevation instead of a footprint that, boom, first and second floor can be 5 feet off the property line. And that, going back to page 11-1, item B says protect and enhance the character of well-established residential neighborhoods. And so I think maintaining the 10% versus this 5% mm-hmm. is in that spirit.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. So just so I understand how to utilize this table as is in here, so if we're looking at the table interior side, it has the setbacks, and then it has additional regulation A, and it is item number 4 under additional regulation A that applies to that. Is that how I use that? And then I go through all of the parameters that are set up in number 4, which is the design criteria. All of those would be part of the evaluation of that setback. Those setbacks?
Correct.
Okay. And then in the rear, where it has 20, with an A modifying just that rear, that means that that only applies to that setback, and it is number 6 going all the way to the edge of that table that are the set of circumstances that are the special regulations that I need to look at. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, so here's where I run into it a little bit. I don't find a 6.
The 6 is above in the table? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's referring.
The numbers in the table correspond. The numbers in the table correspond to the graphics at the top of the table.
Ah, okay.
And then the letters correspond, if you turn the page, section A, reduce setbacks, it gives more information.
Well, that's not at all what I just arrived at. Thank you very much. So that helps me, because I was lost in making that connection.
We felt it was really important to have a description of when someone's going, well, what's an interior side lot line or setback? And so being able to look at a site plan and really find that information to start out and understand your numbers was something that we wanted to have in
Thank
the document.
You. Okay. Now I know how to read that table. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the next page unless anybody has anything else. Okay, we're going over to page number 6. Mr. Daniels, you're first up still. Anything on page 6?
No, but I would like to propose that there be some numbering on top of these pages. When I was reading this, I had a hard time getting to 1770, which is in here a lot, and it would be easier if there'd be some numbering, and it can be under the straight line that you've got here, on both sides. You can take it for what it's worth, and then I'd like to see it. And that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Yes. So that is on page number 6. We're on Mr. Fuller. Do you have
anything? Well, not just 6.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I think that was noted that he's looking for a universal comment there.
Exactly.
Mr. Fuller.
Yeah. So I'd just like to comment on the reduced setbacks, the zero lots, you know, side yard setback. There are some examples of that in existence already in Goleta. I can't say personally that I think they work very well. They're almost unfortunate. But on another hand, if somebody wants to experience the unfortunateness of them, it may or may not be, you know, almost like why not let them? The part of the unfortunateness of them is that you end up with a side of a house that has no windows generally. Yeah. But on the other hand, you end up with the side yard on the other side that, you know, may have a great deal of usability. So those are trade-offs. As it's written in here, it pretty much requires, you know, either an original plan to do this that's approved by probably by Planning Commission or an agreement with a neighbor. So there are benefits to it, and there are negative aspects to it. Just wanted to point that out. It does exist already in our community.
All right, Commissioner Maynard.
I'd like to see for item B, the paving item. I'd like to see a consideration of permeable pavement and trying to move folks towards that permeable pavement. It's readily available these days. It sounds like there's some interest from the community, maybe looking at some requirements for minimum maintained landscaping. And I guess I want to think a little bit carefully about how we word anything we add there, because I want to keep the drought in mind. And so I'd like to have opportunities that you can have something that looks maintained, but also might not be full landscaping, might be something like a rock garden or something along those lines. So as we think more about how to use that language, those are some considerations I'd like to look at. I'd like to talk a little bit about the parking requirements. I know in downtown Santa Barbara, some of the city-owned spaces down there have been able to do some really creative things with requiring residents to prove that they don't own a car before moving into a facility, or requiring new buildings to have a certain amount of additional alternative transportation access. And so rather than having a minimum requirement of parking, I'd like there to be an alternative that with certain alternative transportation measures, you might be able to decrease the amount of parking. So I'd like consideration for that. I like that they've got long-term bicycle parking here, but I also wonder about short-term bicycle parking, especially for folks in the residential, medium-density, or residential high-density. I'd like to see a minimum requirement of short-term bicycle parking.
Sufficiency units.
Great. There is a whole parking section we'll be getting to, as well as landscaping.
And we'll go into more detail here, but I know it does have some parking requirements, so I guess I'm not quite sure what should be addressed here and what should be addressed there.
Okay, back to Mr. Jenkins.
Yeah, Commissioner Maynard, I believe this is just talking about parking for the efficiency units. So mm-hmm. it's not talking about for, you had mentioned some of the other, mm-hmm. MS and all that stuff, but it's RS. So I think that it covers it. I have a question regarding under C1B, talking about food preparation areas, and again, we're talking about the efficiency units, and we've got these little example floor plans. The 80 square feet net floor area, I assume that's not including cabinets, or that is including cabinets and base cabinets. So the kitchen might be 8 by 10, and then the cabinets encroach into that. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, I think what would be clear is actually take the net and just have it be floor area, which then is measured by the standard rules mm-hmm. of measurement.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. And I was curious also just about the parking requirement. I'm actually thinking, so you're allowing a half unit or half a space per unit, which I guess that's encouraging the alternative parking, but struck me as funny that, you know, someone's home, they would only get half a space. So.
Well, and there are rules for if there's a fraction required and rounding up. But exactly, this is, you know, it's one space per two units. So it's not that you would have half a space. It's that you wouldn't have a space. One person would and one would not. And again, that's with kind of the trying to encourage and the assumption that you're in these small units and sure. Hopefully there would be less car ownership. Or.
And then the last one on this page for me is under common open space, 10 square feet per unit must be provided. That's with the assumption that there's a lot of units, I'm assuming. But what if it's a small project and we're only talking maybe four units, you're only talking about 40 square feet of common open space. So I'm curious if we shouldn't have a minimum total size required for the common space.
Okay. So just so I can draw everybody back, what I'd like to try to do is get everybody's comments on a page, then we're going to get staff to come back. That way we answer the questions for everybody where we can. Because if it comes up first, then you'll answer it three times. Okay. So we're moving on to page 7. Guess what? I'm going to change up the order. Commissioner wow. Fuller, you're up first. Mm-hmm. Page 7.
Okay, I just want to, don't know where to address this exactly, so I'll take a stab here. There are no parking standards that I saw, you know, like specific to these units. Is it addressed further in the...
1739.
Okay.
Old chapter.
So there might be helpful if there's a reference to that, you know, in this section so that people don't think that, you know, single family houses, you know, if they don't want to have a garage, they don't have to have one. Or am I missing something here?
Sorry, there is a general reference to that because, so on page 4, regulations applicable to multiple districts are in part 4 of this title. Because otherwise we would just be listing out the entire table of contents of that. So part 4 applies to all districts.
That's good, but you know, parking seems to be a pretty significant thing, especially when you go into garages, you know, like in 3-car garages and 2-car. So you're going into detail already about parking when you go into detail about garages. So noting that, you know, standards maybe under garages, mm-hmm. parking standards are contained somewhere so that people realize that, you know, there is a standard somewhere else and they're not just talking about garages here. So one thought. Also, I'm sure that landscaping is probably also included in 17030 requirements for landscaping. Yeah. So, you know, when you talk about open space required, you know, you might also mention that, you know, landscape requirements are, you know, also in this other specific spot so that people don't, you know, start like are great and very meticulous public, you know, believe that there's no requirement for landscaping. Just okay. A thought.
That's on 7, page 7?
Around there.
Okay. Just to make sure you got all your comments on page 7.
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Okay. Mr. Daniels, anything on page 7?
Negative.
Commissioner Maynard? Commissioner Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. Under garages, D1, garages must be designed and located to reduce the visual impact of garage doors along the street frontages. This train has already left the station. I mean, Goleta has... were characterized by single-family residents with garages facing the street. So my question is, and I understand this is a requirement for, I'm assuming, for new development, but what if someone's home burns down and they need to rebuild it? Can they rebuild the garage facing the street, or would they be required to try to put it in the back? And if you put it in the back, you're encouraging a whole lot more paving along the side yard to do that, so more pervious or impervious, however you want to look at it. So I'm curious if we should be adding language saying in multi-unit development.
We could make a note of that. We do have detailed rules in our non-conforming section okay. that relate to if your building is damaged, how would yeah. you get back what you had.
Okay. And then are we allowing tandem I know you can answer my questions after I've mentioned it, but I'm just curious if we are allowing tandem in the city of Santa or city of Goleta. If we are, it's surprising to me. And then I think 3 and 4 are inappropriate in the zoning ordinance. To me, these are design guidelines, and they should be in the design guidelines, not in a zoning ordinance. And I assume the city of Goleta has has residential design guidelines for the DRB and commercial design guidelines for the DRB?
Not yet.
Okay. Oh. All right. I think that's the home for that, not in a zoning ordinance. And in that same spirit, as we get to the next page in particular, this whole section, 1707.04, I think should be struck because I think it's all relating to design guidelines. But we'll save that for the next page.
Well, go ahead and continue on with the next page.
Well, that's just it. 1, 2, 3, B, it's all design guidelines. So
okay.
I don't think it has a home in the zoning ordinance. However, I do like C. I really, from a planning standpoint, I like C where it says front porch covers may encroach 25% into the required front yard or side yard. To me, that's adding creativity versus a hard and fast front yard setback. It'll allow some architectural element for the front porch alone. We're not talking habitable space. But I like this, and I'm curious if we shouldn't add it to 2-5 and 2-6A3. So.
Anything else on that page, Commissioner May? Commissioner Jenkins?
No, sir.
All right. Commissioner Fuller, you're up on page 8.
Yeah, just one thing. 1707.050A2. The minimum interior side setback from an RS or RP district boundary is 10 feet. And notwithstanding Commissioner Jenkins' suggestion of different setbacks, all of the zones only have
page
a 5. All of this.
We're on
page 2-8.
Okay.
At the bottom.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
All of the setback sites for all those districts are 5 feet. So, you know, you're changing districts. But you're just because you're changing districts, you have a bigger setback than you do within the district. But yet, all the districts have the same setback.
Good one.
So I don't understand why you.
That's okay. Yeah, yeah, good.
Okay.
Well, remember, we're going to limit the back and forth until we get through the page.
I'm good now.
Good. Thank you, sir. Good. Commissioner Maynard?
I don't have a specific comment other than that I agree with the comment that Vice Chair Jenkins made regarding some of these design elements really needing to stay in the design guidelines rather than zoning guidelines. And I would just add to that that it sounds like this the zoning code is primarily going through the Planning Commission, not the Design Review Board, if I'm incorrect, or if maybe staff at the end of this could speak to how the Design Review Board would be commenting, because I'd like to make sure that these types of design guidelines are getting careful attention from the Design Review Board, who is looking at a different set of criteria than we are.
Okay. Mr. Daniels, anything on page 8?
No.
Okay. I have nothing on page 8. All right, staff, anything you wanted to comment on?
Just on the transition standard, so that 1707.050A2, that's just if you are in an RM or an RH district and you're adjacent to a single family or a planned residential district. For the compatibility thing, an additional setback is felt appropriate. And then on the standard / guidelines above it, if you were to take out those design guideline-ish standards but wanted to keep the encroachment, there is a section later back for projections into setbacks, which that could move into. And then on the design review.
All right. Everybody in the audience still awake out there? Go ahead.
On the design review, I will be taking parts of the code, the design aspects, to the board for their comment, and we'll have that back for you. We're going to start tomorrow, actually, if I can still talk, with lighting, and we're going to go from there. So we'll have to backtrack on these for them to see them. So you'll see them before the final review draft. But for lighting, landscape, and signs, more than likely we'll have those comments for you
when you consider that section.
Okay. Okay, the question here is, do you want to break now or do you want to go through a few more pages? That's the question.
Could I clarify one last thing? I was looking at it for page 9, but if we're going to break, I'd like to do it before we break.
The question is, are we going to break? I don't see anyone saying. So okay. Go ahead.
Well, I started on the top of page 9, but I realize it starts on page 8. The one thing I would just say is that within 40 feet of an RSRP, the maximum height is 25 feet, and it goes back, and it has the diagram on the next page. I think the one thing I would say about this is it'd be nice if it actually matched to whatever it's up against. Mm-hmm. So the height of the neighboring district could be a maximum 25 or a maximum 30, I think, or maybe if it's maximum 25, maximum, either 25 or 20. But it'd be nice if that lower height matched whatever it was coming up against. Does that make sense? So I think I can use examples here. So, like, if the maximum height is 25, then it should be the maximum building height at that point should be 25. But if the maximum height's 35, then it should be able to go up to 35 of the neighboring. It should be whatever the neighboring district is rather than just the number that it is here.
So I think I see what you're saying. Since yep. In RP, there's some areas where the maximum height is 25.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the RM district adjacent to RP, mm-hmm. if RP can go up to 35, RM should be able to go up to 35.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay, so Commissioner Maynard, we are on page 9, and you have started it for us. So do you have anything else on page 9?
No, that was all I had.
Commissioner Fuller?
Good, Chair.
Commissioner Daniels?
Already been taken care of. Thank you.
And Commissioner Jenkins?
I'm curious for figure 1707050A, should it say standards RM or RH? Or are we correct saying and? And then again, B1 and 2, I'm thinking, are design guidelines, not zoning.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
All right, we're going to the next page. Page number 10, Mr. Fuller, what do you have? Anything there?
I'm good, Chair.
All right. Mr. Jenkins?
Under D, I think we have a typo. Buildings in preferred. It should be buildings is preferred. D1, to me, does not make sense. I reread it multiple times, so I think you need to work on that language. Can you come back to me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Maynard, put you on the spot.
I have some for section F. I'd like to see bike access connecting. The bike lane should connect to where the bike parking is, and if there is a bike lane near the property, that the bike there should be a connection between the exterior, the bike lane coming up to the property through bike lanes throughout the property to where the bike parking is. We have this wonderful language around a system of pedestrian walkways, but not really a system of bike paths, and I think that's particularly important for the larger residential buildings. I also want to talk about F2. I really like this language where a required walkway crosses driveways. I wonder if we want to take it one step further. I know in the UC Santa Barbara campus, they actually have bumps there that allow somebody who's blind to know that there's a transition at that point. And that would help us to move to disability access as well. So I want to consider that in F2. And since we're going to try to make these global comments, it'll come up on 1707-60C2 as well. So there'll be some similar comments from me on both of those.
That's actually state law.
State law that you have the bumps.
The bubbles, yeah.
Ah, wonderful. I had one question. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to bring it up now on the next page, but the language for F in this section is very similar to language in C on the next page with some very small differences. And I'd like staff to tell us a little bit about the differences in language, particularly in the last sentence. It says, direct and convenient access must be provided to adjoining residential and commercial areas to the maximum extent feasible when we're talking about F, but then when we're looking at mobile home districts, we use the language whenever feasible in that last sentence. And I'm not sure I'm picking up that nuance, so if somebody could help me understand the difference between those two, or if they should maybe not be different. That is my comments on that page.
Okay. Commissioner Daniels, anything on, and you know what, we've just expanded it to include page 11 as well. So you can make comments on both of those pages.
And 12?
No, not 12 yet, not 12 yet.
Okay. 11, no, thank you.
Okay, and I'll come back to anybody that didn't get a chance on page 11. Commissioner Jenkins.
Mr. Chair, I still had a couple things on 10, I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead.
Direct and convenient, this is under F again, talking pedestrian access from the RM and RH district. Direct and convenient access must be provided to adjoining residential commercial areas. Are we talking about surrounding residential and commercial areas? Are we talking adjoining, meaning adjacent? And if we are we building a potential conflict between an adjoining or adjacent property owner's rights?
Let's go on.
And, okay, great. And then F1, I believe, and this is global because we're going to see walkways being 6 feet wide. Sidewalks in Goleta are typically 5 feet. So we're talking minimum, so I would suggest we go to a minimum of 5 feet wide. That means ADA requirements to say minimum of 6 is too much. Going on to 11. Same conflict regarding the item C under the access adjacent. And again, another 5 foot suggestion for the walkway.
Great. Anything else? Anybody else have anything on, because I kind of, we were looking at 10, we've kind of expanded to 11. Commissioner Fuller, anything on? Commissioner Maynard, did we get all the comments on both? Okay, so staff, if you want to take a minute to respond to anything there, or you just take your notes. Noted? Okay, good. We're into page 12, commercial districts. We ready? Commissioner?
Nothing on page 12.
Fuller, nothing on page 12. Maynard?
Under regional commercial, there's the language without limitation. So I'd like to learn a little bit more with that. That's a stronger language we've seen in a lot of the other sections. So I'd like to figure out why that was used there. There was some specific language in this in the general plan for regional commercial that said limiting large retail to lands designated in 2005. So there's a little bit more specific language there. I do want to recognize that it is somewhat addressed in the table later. So maybe it's already there, but there was some thoughts there. And then I also liked in community commercial, in the general plan, there was language that said, while protecting the residential character of the area, and uses that may attract, and also some warning around uses that may attract significant traffic, are discouraged. So there was some additional community concerns that seemed to go into that general plan language that I'm not sure if that was fully incorporated into community commercial here. So that was just looking at some of the differences between the general plan language and how we phrased it here.
12. Mr. Daniels, anything on page 12, section 2, page 12?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yeah, two little typos I see under A, after the word residential, we have a hyphen, which I think is wrong. And then on the last paragraph in the first sentence, range of local, and then another hyphen that I think should be taken out. That's all I have.
All right. Go on to page 13 then, Mr. Jenkins. Anything on page 13?
Nothing.
No?
Nope.
Mr. Daniels, page 13?
No, sir.
Commissioner Fuller?
Good.
Commissioner Maynard.
Yes. So there was a community comment that was submitted from Kathy Toro that talked about specifically general industrial, but some of the things she talked about in here, and the reason I'm bringing it up here, I promise I'll tie it back, is that in particular she talked about her the place that she was living and the connection of being close to body repair, auto shops, auto body paints near residential. And this general commercial category does include a lot of industrial, while it also specifically is described as being a buffer zone between potentially light industrial and residential. It doesn't seem that it's a very good buffer between that if it also includes a lot of the things that we're concerned about in light industrial. So I just wanted to think a little bit about those comments we've gotten from the public and whether we're including a little bit too much industrial and general commercial, and we can talk about that more as we get to the table, but I just wanted to think about that focus here.
Okay, so that was comments on 13. Did I exclude anybody on 13? No? You know what? I need 5 minutes. So we're going to come back and we're going to start on page 14 and keep in mind now we're at 8 o'clock. We have got 30 some pages left in section 2, and we still have section 3. So if there's when we come back, if there's discussion of how we can move this at a different pace, we'll entertain that, but take 5 minutes, and then let's get right back to it.
And for the public and for the commissioners, there's it's a workshop, so we have some snacks on the table over there and water.
Okay.
And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss the good life, goodbye.
Page 14. When we left here, we were saying, is there any change in procedure or anything that anybody would recommend at this point? Our director has suggested that we really need to finish 1 and 2 this evening. So we need to move along as quickly as we can and still include all the comments that are appropriate. But at this pace, we'll be here till midnight, so we do want to move it up a little quicker than we have been going forward. Any suggestions from any of the commission?
Would it be possible to do a special meeting so that we could do at least some of these sections at that point? It seems like we have so much on the agenda today. We've had so many great comments. I wouldn't want to rush us so much. And if we stay until midnight, I think we'll lose a lot of our community. So I worry about that participation.
We don't intend to keep you here that late. I was joking with the chair that it was 10:30. We'd like the commission to go as far as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we'll schedule specials as needed.
Mm-hmm.
But we're already, during council or director comments, I'll need to talk to you about that. So,
okay.
For actual business items.
Yeah, so. But I'm the chair, and we will go till midnight. So let's work through this. But anybody have any other comments on how they think we could move through this? Okay, we're back to it line by line. We're on page 14. Commissioner Daniels, you have any comments on page 14?
Negative, Chair.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No.
Commissioner Fuller, see, I'm starting to lose Commissioner. Go ahead.
I'm good, Chair.
Commissioner Maynard?
I feel good about 14.
All right, we're moving on to 15 with you, Commissioner Maynard. What do you have?
I'd like to see under automotive vehicle service and repair minor for commercial general, potentially having an AU here instead of a P. Again, going back to the comments of Kathy Toro, who was concerned about having those types of uses close to her residential area, and I thought she made a good point. So I think maybe an AU instead of a P under commercial general.
Okay. Anything else? No? Commissioner Fuller? We're talking about page 15.
Right. I'm good. Thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yeah, I just respectfully disagree with Commissioner Maynard on the AU. I think it's commercial general. We're talking minor, and I think it should be permitted, but that's just
okay.
My take.
That's valuable as well.
I can add to that. I would recommend you look at the classifications because minor is really just about sales, mm-hmm. replacement of small parts and liquids. It would be the oil change place on the corner of Fairview and Hollister, that level. It wouldn't be hardcore auto repair. Yeah. So there is a differential in the classification section.
Anything else, Commissioner Jenkins,
nope.
on that page?
Nope.
Commissioner Daniels?
Mm-mm.
Just a comment that I'm looking at. Restaurants takeout look like they're not allowed in OT and visitors serving. Just asking that question in takeout only, why that exists that way. Moving on to number 16, Mr. Daniels, anything there?
No.
Mr. No. Jenkins?
I was just curious the difference between general and restricted, but maybe I just need to do some more reading under the offices, general personal services, and general restricted personal services.
And I'm sorry, okay, personal services.
Yeah, okay. General and restricted. I'm just curious the difference.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, anything on 16?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Commissioner Maynard, 16.
On restaurants with drive-through, the third row on this under Old Town, it's under conditional use, but I think that should be not permitted based on the general plan. In the general plan, it specifically describes Old Town as not having drive-throughs.
That's a good catch, if that's what it says in the general plan. Very good. Okay, we're over to page 17. And Commissioner Maynard, why don't you make your comments on 17?
I'd like to see an AU or a CU under vehicle equipment facilities, heavy vehicle and large equipment sales, rental, service, and repair under commercial general.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, anything?
No, Chair.
Nope. Commissioner Jenkins?
Nope.
Commissioner Daniels, anything on page 17?
Nope. Thank you.
I just have looking at, outdoor storage, not allowed in the Old Town District. I'm wondering where, is there already an existing conflict in any of the Old Town Heritage District, whether that would be car dealers or some of the other activities in that area. So a comment there. Light fleet-based services. Let's see what my commercial general. So the definition of light fleet-based, I'll be fine. Can you explain to me what a reverse vending machine is while we're going? Who knows what a reverse vending machine is?
It's for recycling. You put the bottle in, and then it gives you a quarter or whatever.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. So we're over to page 18. Commissioner Maynard, do you have anything on 18?
No comments on 18.
Commissioner Fuller? I'm good. Commissioner Jenkins?
Mm-mm.
Commissioner Daniels, 18.
No comment.
I have one comment. Vending machines outdoor in the Old Town Heritage District. Would that include something like a water machine that sits in front of the Santa Cruz Market today? Would that be a conflict?
Mm-hmm.
Not permitted.
Yep.
So, for thought. Page 19, Mr. Daniels, what do you have on page 19? Anything?
No.
No, Mr. Jenkins?
No, thanks.
Mr. Fuller?
I'm good, thank you.
Ms. Maynard?
I'm okay.
Okay, what do I have here? The Old Town building height is by general plan 30 foot. We have 30 foot versus 35 in some of our other districts. Is that... I'm a little confused on that one. Maximum lot coverage And minimum landscaping in visitor services, of course, is a significantly different number than other properties within this category. So 20%. So I'm asking that question, whether that's valid and can be substantiated. Page 20, Mr. Daniels.
I was looking at 19. 20 now, no.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yeah, again, D and E both seem to be design guidelines. However, in E, we have an errant hyphen again after the word front in the first sentence.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Commissioner Fuller on page 20.
Good, thank you.
Commissioner Maynard.
I'll be brief because I think it got addressed a bit by Ms. Carmen earlier, but I am worried about the 65-foot height for the hotels, especially because the hotels in three of the different locations, the two existing visitor service districts are both in view corridors with views, protected views in both directions, and then one of the two hotel overlay dots also has a view corridor there as well. So I'm very concerned about the 65 feet, but it sounds like we might be getting, might change that already. And particularly that language of by right, given that this is something that heights are something the community cares very strongly about, I would certainly, if we were going to consider heights like this, I would want it to be something that came to a meeting in a CU type of situation, not a by right situation.
All right. Anything else on page 20, Commissioner Maynard?
Oh, and then also on adjacent to residential uses, I want to, I'm just thinking about the commercial general, if we're going to have some industrial uses in there, thinking about the setbacks from residential, and just thinking of the industrial applications, something else I wanted to flag.
Okay, why don't you pick up page 21, Commissioner Maynard, and see if you have any comments there.
I have a question on number three. I'd like to know who the approving authority is. I had some my comments before about bikes in the pedestrian access sections before. I'd like to have those here again. I won't repeat them. Thank you.
Commissioner Fuller on 21.
I'm good, Chair.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Again, we're talking design guidelines 1, 2, and 3. Versus zoning. And then the other thing too, I just want to comment on this diagram, which I think is more appropriate in design guidelines. We're, if every building went with this, I'm just cautious that we're creating cookie cutter design. And you know, you want to give design the ability to be different and unique and all the rest. So I hesitate. It's a maximum 20 feet between openings. I'm just saying, you know, anyhow, maybe the DRB can address that, but that's just my two cents. And then under F1, again, that should be a 5 foot, minimum 5 foot wide walkway.
Commissioner Daniels?
Negative.
On page 21, I have nothing on 21. We're moving over to 22. Commissioner Daniels, you got the floor. Page 22, anything there?
No.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
Similar here with the transition standards. I'd like it to match the use next to it rather than be set at 30 feet. And I have one quick question on process. When we're going over the residential standards, staff responded after each page. Will we get the staff responses at the next meeting then, or how? When I really appreciate getting the staff responses. I know we're trying to streamline things now, but when will we hear those staff responses if we're skipping them on the pages?
Well, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you there.
So we have a couple ways that we can do this. So in our staff report wrap-up, we'll be responding to some of the questions, especially the ones we'll look at them and see which ones can be bundled that are similar, like the design guideline stuff, and some of your parking comments. And then also, when we do give you the underlined strike-through, eventually there'll be notes in them so that things are explained. So there'll be two ways that you'll be seeing our responses. But the wrap-up is a great time for us to be able to explain, you know, some of the comments, and we're over here taking notes about the responses that we can provide in the wrap-up.
So I think that would work for me as long as, this morning we have to start by responding to what that track of what you had changed, and if we could add things at that point after hearing your responses, because mm-hmm. One of the things that happened in the residential section is staff would clarify something, and then that would help me know which way to vote or which way to lean towards with my recommendations. So if I could still make recommendations after you do your report back by giving commentary on the changes made at the beginning of next meeting, would that work? If we're trying to streamline, I'm just trying to figure out where how this process goes.
You'll have another shot. Let's just say you will have another shot at it.
Chair, if there's something that we really we need to clarify, we will. So we're not going to just stay silent for the rest of the meeting. If there's something that's urgent, we will chime in.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Maynard, I just wanted to clarify your comment regarding the diagram on this page. Are you suggesting that the commercial district should have the same height limitation as the adjacent residential?
Where the 40-foot, for example, or it says maximum 30-foot is here, that maximum 30-foot, if the residential district that's next to it has a maximum 30 feet, that makes sense. If the residential next to it has a maximum 25 feet, then maybe that max should be 25. So whatever the max 30 should match whatever the district is next to it. Is what I'm suggesting.
Okay, I understand, and I respectfully disagree with you, but that's okay.
Okay.
Right, Commissioner Fuller.
Yeah, I am side with Commissioner Jenkins. I think that having a step back is perfectly fine, but I'm not sure I'm understanding this, but it sounds like you want to have the whole next door district have the same height level as the residential neighborhood, and that just kind of defeats the purpose of allowing different types of buildings to have different forms and factors. Having a step back, which I believe this is what the intent of the people who produce this is, allows for some kind of compatibility to occur, as opposed to having it exactly 40 feet right at the edge or of a residential district. And I'm happy with what they've produced here.
Sorry, can I just respond to that to clarify? I'm only talking about that 40-foot distance. So instead of 30 feet across that 40-foot distance, it would be whatever the residential district is before. I'm not suggesting that the whole district next to it would have to be 30 feet. We're just discussing that 40-feet area.
Okay. Noted, I'm sure. Anybody else have a comment on 22? Nope, we're moving on to 23. Commissioner Maynard, you go ahead and take 23 first.
Just a slight one, the first line where it's two in parentheses, where it says circulation parking plans, I'd like to bike parking to be included in that because it's got bike circulation but not bike parking.
Okay, anybody else comment on that page? Anybody else? No, we're moving on to 24. All right, who's got a comment on 24? Anybody? Go ahead, Commissioner Maynard.
Sure, so in the same theme, I'm also not seeing a lot of language around bike paths and bike parking here, but there's lots of language about sidewalks and other forms of circulation.
Okay. Any other comments on 24? How about 25? Who's got a comment on page 25? I'll raise you one. No.
Sorry, I was using it.
Anybody's got a comment? Go ahead.
If no one else does, I will. So there's a section on cart corrals here, and I believe we earlier in another document have done some of this language. I think it's either in the general plan or a design guidelines. It says we've got commercial displays, outdoor dining, and outdoor shopping cart storage shall not encroach into pedestrian accessways. I'd love to see that also repeated here with cart corrals. And also that shopping cart returns should be conveniently located and also screened. This is some language we've developed in other documents, so it'd be nice to include that. Or we could also look at that and keep that in other design documents rather than zoning code.
Right. Anybody else have a comment on page 25? I don't see any. We're turning the page to 26. Any comments there?
Why isn't this design criteria good for...
So anything on 26? No?
I do.
Mr. Daniels, do you have something?
Or is it, is it for the Planning Commission to read?
Perhaps you should announce your question. My response would be that it's talking about siting, so entrance locations. I believe that's a planning concern. That's why I didn't say anything about this going to a design guideline, but it could. But I think this is more planning related.
Mm-hmm. And this type criteria are part of the findings for approval.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we're going to office districts now.
Sorry, I did have something on 26, which was just on transit facilities. I would also like language around protection from the rain as well.
Okay. Page 27, office districts. Any comments on page 27? I don't see any. We're going to move on to the table on page 28. Who has a comment here on page 28? And if you don't have one, you just say no. That'll signal me to move on. I may hesitate if you don't say no, or I may not. So.
No.
No.
No chair.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Commissioner Maynard? Okay. 29. Moving to 30. Not trying to overwhelm you here, but let's just trying to move it along. Page 30. You don't see anybody speaking up. 31. Anyone?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Under D1, I just wrote a note. Customer parking can be located near the office area. Is that necessary? It seems obvious. I'm not sure the intent of that. Can be located near the office area. So.
Okay. We got one item on page 32. Any comments on that one?
No.
No? All right, we're into industrial districts, page 33. Anyone on page 33? Go ahead.
I have a concern with potential noxious impacts being next to residential. That's in the definition of what general industrial is. So I just want to be cognizant of that and how close it might be to residential.
All right. Anyone else on the first page of the industrial districts? How about on the next page? Any comments on this table?
I don't see where there's any residential permitted here. And you're talking about residential?
Because industrial districts can be next to residential, I just want to be cognizant of what we're putting right up against a residential. So just thinking the next step down. But no, it is not residential here.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
We're on page 34?
Oh, I know, I jumped all the way to 37.
Oh, I wish we could do that.
Do it.
Hold on. So 34, I do have, on the last line of 34, under industrial uses, heavy vehicle, large equipment sales, rental, service, and repair are permitted under both districts. And then... if I skip to the next page, freight truck terminals and warehouses require administrative permitting. So, fine line as to the differential of those, and I'm not sure why there's the difference in the allowable and required for. Administrative permitting. So that takes us to page 35. Anybody else have a comment on page 35? I'm going to jump into transportation passenger terminals. Obviously, I'm asking why they would need a special permitting. Those are the only districts where they're allowed in. It seems difficult. But and then the question on caretaker units. That requires an administrative use when I think under our current code it's allowed by permit or it is a allowed use. So that seems like a restrictive change on the caretaker units in those districts. Anybody else have a comment on 35? Yes, Mr. So
is, are those the only districts that are transportation terminals allowed in?
To my knowledge.
Because it seems kind of like people would have to go to an industrial area in order to obtain transportation to areas.
I think it might be allowed under general commercial as well. But not a lot. They like to keep us bus companies tucked away. 36, page 36. Anybody have a comment on 36? Didn't hear any no's, but I'm assuming that. 37?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, Commissioner Maynard, on 37B, they do provide for transition of 50 feet into residential zones. That might be helpful to... Okay.
Any other comments on page 37? Moving on to page 38. Screening and separation of parking areas. Comments on this page? I don't see any. 39. Public and quasi-public districts. Any comments on page 39? Going on to page 40. Tables, comments, Commissioner Maynard?
In the general plan, the parks and recreational facilities were kept separate from public and quasi-public districts, but here they're combined into this section, and it was fairly explicitly called out in the general plan, so I'm curious why we made a change in that decision. So I wanted to note that here.
Okay. Any other comments on this table and this page?
Yes.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Do we have a definition separating what major and minor transportation passenger terminal is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we will need to review that when we get there.
Okay.
Anybody else on that page? Oh, boy, there's another spot where they allow passenger transportation.
Yeah. There you go.
Good. Page 41. Anybody have a comment on 41? I do not.
No.
42? No. 43. Open space and agricultural districts. Any comments on that one? From page 43. I just have a question on the on item C, establish controls on development that will protect, are we going to have controls on development in this code? Obviously, we have ordinances and things that address that. I'm just wondering what that means. All right, we're at page 44. Here we go, Commissioner Maynard.
So we've combined parking public and private, and I'm not sure if private parking makes sense on the OSPR, OSAR, so that's just something I wanted to note on that. I guess there's a two. So it says public parking, so I guess is private then not allowed, given the footnote two? I guess I want some clarity on that.
Parking public or private, okay.
But then I believe on footnote two, it maybe restricts it to the public. I wasn't sure if I was fully understanding that correctly.
After we're done, you can go back to the classification section, and a lot of your questions will get answered there.
Maybe we should go to that section first.
Yeah.
And just the short answer to that, correct. It's limited to public.
Yeah.
Okay, page 44. Any other comments on page 44? Going once, twice, we're at page 45. Anybody have a comment on page 45?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Under footnote 3, and I believe that's talking about the produce stand, yeah, mm-hmm. Under the AG. I'm just curious as to how large the produce stand is at Fairview Gardens. It just seems like 200 square feet is kind of small. I mean, that's barely a one-car garage, 10 by 20, and... If they have a restroom, is that gobbling up into that 200 square foot as well? So it just seems like maybe 400 square feet might be a little bit more friendly. And then you're also talking gross square foot, so you're including the walls here, so you're penalizing them as well. So I think a little bit more square footage, maybe 400 net might be friendlier. Maybe check Fairview Gardens and see consistency there.
Thank you. Any other comments on that page?
Yeah, just a little bit, maybe in support of Commissioner Maynard. It does seem a little confusing when you say parking public or private, and then you have a footnote that says it's limited to public parking for recreational use. So maybe just taking the private off, you know, so there's no like thought that they could have a private and then find out, oh, we can't. Just.
All right, we're over to page 46. Any comments on page 46 on the table here?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm curious where the 10% came from, 10% lot coverage for greenhouses, and if that's been vetted with the ag community.
And I'll support him on that one. That's a question that seems to be coming up in discussions whether with expanding of greenhouse use on agricultural lands for a lot of things and mm-hmm. a 10% coverage. What does that mean? Is it effective or not?
Right. And also, what about berry structures, the hoop structures? Is that included in greenhouse or is that a separate structure?
Great. Mr. Daniels, anything on that page?
None.
None? Okay. We're going on to Plan Development District, page 47. So I think we had a little bit of this discussion in the presentation today. But any comments on this first page?
Yes.
Go ahead.
A couple of typos that I believe. We're adding hyphens in front of the abbreviations on some of these. I noticed it in the staff report and here. And there's some inconsistencies in the document where we've added a hyphen. So, you know, for instance, dash PD district, wondering if it should just say PD. So there's about three locations on this page. So I'm just curious if that's what our intent was.
Good. Any other comments on that page? If not, we're moving on to 48. Any comments here?
Mr. Chair, I had a question regarding if staff could explain in F1 what the perimeter of ownership, what do they mean by that?
Could you redirect me to that one?
F1,
mm-hmm.
The perimeter of ownership. So the map showing the proposed project boundaries, the perimeter of ownership, location. So I'm just, what are you looking for?
So that maybe if there's multiple owners of properties within the proposed plan development showing the perimeter of those.
Or let's say Old Town Village only used half of the lot that they own, but they wanted to do it as a plan development. So they would show the perimeter of ownership and the perimeter of the plan development area.
So that's a real world situation where you've got, okay, thank you.
Okay, any comments, other comments on that page? We're moving on to page 49. And 49 is continuing from F. Permit requirements. Any comments here?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
At the top of the page, I had a note here to myself. After removal, the word removal, adding a comma saying and existing structures on adjacent properties. I think would be helpful when you're presenting a site plan for decision makers to be able to see the footprint of adjacent structures and their proximity. And I would also, under number 4, the site plan, also require them to indicate the land use zone of adjacent properties. That's also helpful in the decision making. And under required findings, 1713040, required findings for a planned development district, a PD district, zoning amendment can only meet. Who's making these findings? Are these made by the ZA, the PC, the CC, or staff?
Well, this is a zoning map amendment, so that goes all the way to City Council?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So any other comments on page 49? If not, we're moving on to page 50. Anybody have anything on page 50? Page 51. And I guess you don't have anything on page 52. Okay, so we're going into the overlay districts. We're going to start with the airport overlay environment. Page
could one.
Yes.
Could I make a question about overlay districts? So I'll make it on page 53 before we get into that. Is that okay?
Sure.
In the general plan, there were some overlay areas, and I just wanted to find out how the overlay areas related to the overlay districts. So there was the hotel overlay, the hospital overlay, and the open space overlay, who have some requirements. And then we've got these overlay districts. Are those different? Will we talk about overlay areas later, just because they're not here? So that was something that...
Who's going to answer that question? And that has to be you.
No one else will answer. I'll answer. Some of the overlays are required. So, for example, the airport overlay, we have to take what's in the airport land use compatibility plan and then put it in here as an overlay because it covers a broad number of districts. So while it may not have been specified in the general plan, it's just part of good planning because it is covering multiple districts. For the hospital overlay, let's go through them one by one. The affordable housing overlay. So the affordable housing overlay that's called for in the general plan covers multiple districts. So, or actually, it has detail that is not specific to that district. So it goes above and beyond what is required in that base district. So that's why we put the detail in our affordable housing overlay district. The hospital overlay is called for in the general plan. And so we took the detail about, for example, height and lot coverage that's in the land use element. I think it's 4.3 and 4.4, LU 4.3 and 4.4, and put the details in the hospital overlay. It is on the land use plan map too, as far as nomenclature. The master plan, that was just different. It's giving us more tools that we might find. And the same thing with the Old Town Heritage Overlay. That's some stuff that we brought in from the county, some useful tools that we're trying to get detailed out. The hotel overlay area, that's a little different. So the general plan has two locations in the hotel area. And both of those locations are already mid-process. It's not really an overlay because it's in one district and they're both with applications. So I don't know if Ms. Carmen wants to talk a little bit more about those, the hotel areas.
Well, I would just say the hotel overlay area in the general plan is implemented through the district standards for hotels. So it's just a different mechanism for implementing that.
And then similarly, then would open space overlay area from the general plan then be in the open space district here? So that's why there's not a separate overlay, or why was that one not here?
And I would go back to Ann on that one.
It's important to note that general plans typically don't have the overlays and regulatory language that ours do, or does. And there was a method to that madness when the general plan was written. So part of the intent was to put all, and this is the intent that we have found through all of the staff reports, given that we weren't here while Ann was here during that process. But the intent was to eventually roll down those regulations and standards. So that's why we're tying everything back to the land use map. We're bringing things over that are still relevant from the general plan as far as overlays and those types of regulatory language. But the general plan is typically policy, not necessarily regulation. So we sort of have this hybrid. And that's why I think some of the confusion is there about why we're not just bringing everything over as is. Aspect of the hotel overlay, we would need to look at that. If a new hotel came in tomorrow, would it be consistent with the general plan because it doesn't have a dot? on the future land use map that have designated hotels. That's something we'd have to consider. So it's those types of questions as we continue to move through this that'll keep coming up.
And Ms. Carmen raises a good point about the open space overlay. So that the open space overlay traditionally would cover, you know, multiple zones or have some kind of, the general plan would have some kind of broader context of an open space overlay. When in actuality, it has 18, in the general plan, it's 18 parcels along Matilda. And there's a backstory on that, too, as far as first it was going to be the land use designation change was going to be open space. And there was some pushback from the landowners because it's single family. Mm-hmm. And so a compromise, so to speak, was struck that we would earmark them as open space, as an open space, future open space. And so how this city is looking at that is we're going one by one and attempting to purchase all of those parcels. Since they are generally covered with some kind of environmentally sensitive habitat, they still have land development potential because of the zoning and the land use designation. But we have, I think, to date purchased 4 parcels. So we're chipping away to include them in the larger Elwood Mesa open space. So it's not really an open space district per se from what's in the general plan. So it's more of a like an area, an overlay area, but it didn't really meet the criteria for what would be a district, which is why we didn't include it in here.
Okay, so we're airport environments overlay district, part 3, page 1. Any comments on this page?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Jenkins.
I believe there's a typo. I don't think avigation is a word. I think we mean aviation.
Okay. Mr. Daniels, anything? On page 1?
Not on page 1.
Anybody else? I just wanted to revisit. You guys did make the comment that this zoning code will be consistent with the airport land use. That is currently in effect, and we would have to change our reg should that regulation change. It's not just automatically adopted.
That's correct. So we will have a certain number of days by which that we have to change our overlay district for the airport once it's readopted at such time that it is. They still have a ways to go before they update the airport land use plan.
Okay. Page 2. Anybody have a comment on page 2? I do have a, just to make sure that I understand it, as a, when on item B3, the concentration of people greater than 25 persons per gross acre, is that employment or is it 25 employment per acre? Or you can clarify that for us as we go through. So that's my only comment on 2. Any other comments on 2? On page 3.
Yes.
Mr. Daniels.
Regulations for airspace protection A is height limits. It has a discussion here, but it never gives a height limit. I understand how these guys like to use formulas. Do you have the particular site that you you speak to here? Can we put it in the attachments somehow? Because if you are telling somebody you have to go to the airport, that's really not you know, very friendly, if I could say it in that word. But it doesn't give you a height limit. So it points you to the airport. And I just wanted to know, and, you know, if you could put it in the attachments. And I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have a question regarding airport approach zones. Do we anywhere, and maybe this is more a, I don't know, law enforcement thing too, but do we have any consideration for Ealing's Park, someone flying a radio-controlled plane, flying a kite, flying a drone, any type of restriction and or enforcement that can be addressed in an approach zone? And then under 1717.050, when we're talking about 60 CNL, I think we should probably, for the reader, clarify that that's community noise equivalent level first, and then parentheses CNL.
All right. Any other comments on page 3? Commissioner Maynard? I just have a comment under 1717.060B. It says FAA notification. Is that actually approval versus notification? I'm asking that question, whether I'm on page 3, item B, you see it? It says FAA notification, but I think you have to have approval. So maybe if it's compatible with airport land use plan, then it's the AAA approval. So 11-4, any comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, same typo. Avigation should be aviation at the top.
Oh, yeah. Good one. Okay.
It's not a typo.
Oh, it's
an
not.
Actual word. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it should be, but
avigation?
I consulted Webster's and it wasn't listed, so
it's technical.
My bad, if that's
all right. So just to help you out there, we do have a typo in A because it says aviation easement and it should be avigation easement.
Interesting. So what is avigation?
One way or another.
All right, well, good.
Okay. Wait, sorry, could you say what avigation is?
It's a type of easement that is aeronautic speak.
Like navigation, only
yeah.
Avigation?
Aerial okay. Navigation.
Okay. All right.
All right, we are to now page, part 3 and page 5, affordable housing overlay. Anything on that page? We're turning to page 6. Whoa, I went too fast. Mr. Fuller.
So I just want to clarify, these are all specified in the general plan, is that correct? So this is following general plan guidelines, right? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question regarding under A1. It's talking about 5% of the total number of sales units. And you're saying this includes extremely low and very low incomes. So are you asking for 2.5% for extremely low and 2.5% for very low? Should we clarify that somehow? Question.
Okay. I think this is laid out by ordinance. Okay, so we're at page 6. Comments? Any?
Just curious about the hyphen in the first paragraph, moderate income. Wondering if that hyphen's needed.
Okay. So I just have a comment on B. No reduction allowed in these percentages for any reason. Wow. Unequivocally, no change. I guess unless we change the zoning or whatever.
Is that from the general plan?
I don't recall that language. I'll make a comment also on processing fees. Just so I make sure that I understand, 20%. The product would probably at least 20% is extremely low. So waive all fees. Is this got to come from somewhere else? This isn't a policy decision that we're making here on waiving fees, processing fees to this level based on set-asides for affordable housing. And I just don't remember that language.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm also curious, too, are you talking about all agencies? I mean, are you waiving fees for Goleta Water District, County Fire, et cetera?
This is codified somewhere. Do you know where you pulled that from? Because we certainly can't make a policy.
I can't recall. We have to look back at our housing element on that one.
Okay. So just to comment on those fee waivers, they got to be coming from somewhere else to that level. All right. Anything? Hold on to your seats. We're getting close. Mm-hmm. We're on page 7. Anybody have anything on page 7?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Daniels.
Lot coverage.
Lot coverage. Go ahead.
The maximum lot coverage may be increased from 40% to 60%. Isn't the maximum lot coverage 60%?
At hospitals?
Yeah. I mean, why say from 40 to 60 if 60 is maximum?
Okay. Yeah. Good. Anybody else comment on that page?
Yes.
Yes.
Under 1719.020 applicability, I think you meant this chapter in the middle sentence, except as provided in this chapter. And let's see.
Anything else?
I was curious on the 55 feet. Under additional height, 55 feet for hospital buildings, and you're saying cannot exceed 3 stories. Well, 55 divided by 3, that's 18 feet per floor, and I know they have very thick floor systems in hospitals typically, but should we be considering 4-story in 55 feet? Because that would be 14 feet per floor. So I'm just curious as to the logic behind the 3-story limitation with 55 feet.
Okay. Turning the page, we're now on page 8 on the Master Plan Overlay District. Commissioner Maynard.
On 1720.010B, maintain an environmental equilibrium. I'd like a little bit of definition about what an environmental equilibrium is. And depending on your answer to that, maybe we should add ecosystems to that list.
Any other comments here?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We're on page 8, right?
Yep.
Under purpose 1720.010D, promote sensitive site planning and design. What does it mean? Yeah, exactly. Are we wanting exceptional, adequate, above average? Maybe strike it because the following sentence kind of says it, I believe. The master plan overlay district is proactive designation of the city to promote orderly, well-planned development and avoid piecemeal subdivisions of land. So it just sensitive site planning seems a little wishy-washy or something. So.
Hold on a minute. Mr. Daniels, anything?
Negative.
Back to you, Commissioner Maynard.
I would lean towards not striking D, but I do agree with Vice Chair Jenkins that the language is very wishy-washy. To me, I read it that we're talking about environmental sensitivity and thinking about the space, and again, maybe that's how I'm reading it, but I think there might be an intent there that isn't captured by the next sentence, so maybe we could revisit this after we have a better understanding of what the goal here was.
All right, let's go on to the next page. Commissioner Maynard, do you have anything on page 9?
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just clarify that going back to the hospital overlay, I'll probably regret making you turn back, but I just wanted to make sure to emphasize General Plan Policy LU 4.3 that talks about the height and gives a height of 55 feet for hospital buildings and 45 feet for medical office buildings, so that we pulled straight from the mostly from the general plan. Provided, however, that no buildings shall exceed 3 stories in height.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just doing the math doesn't make sense to me.
But it's in the plan.
It's in.
Sure. Okay. So I think we were on page 9. Commissioner Maynard, we're in your... Nope. Anybody else on page 9?
Nope.
Going to page 10. No? Yes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm just curious if under the title expiration and renewal, : changed plans, I wonder if that shouldn't say modified plans.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard?
under 1720-090D. Again, I'd like to see a little bit of guidelines to support the zoning administrator in making these decisions. I know some communities have since substantial conformity determination guidelines. Could some additional guidelines be developed to support the zoning administrator in making these types of decisions?
Thank you. Anybody else on page 10? We're moving on to page 11. Commissioner Daniels, anything on page 11? Part 3, page 11.
Nope.
Anybody else?
Yes.
No, I do, sorry. Hold your breath, go ahead.
kind of a fundamental question here. Talking about heritage, right? Old Town Heritage District. What is the heritage? Is it ag? Because currently, you know, and then it goes on and says, to ensure development of a distinctive and unified streetscape. Well, currently, Old Town is quite the mix. It's all over the board with distinct architectural examples from every decade. So I'm not quite sure what we're looking for as far as heritage. I'm sure it's been fleshed out during the general plan process, but it just, I'm not quite sure it works. And then under applicability, I had a note to myself, the standards of this chapter apply to sites designated with the OTH extension on the zoning. I'm not quite sure what you mean by the word extension. And let's see. And then down in 1721030, there are heritage district guidelines referenced in the last sentence. Do those currently exist?
Yes, they do.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Maynard.
I only have a small edit, but it would be nice to reference where the heritage district guidelines are, if they're in one of the other plans, or how those can be referenced easily.
They're their own thing.
Yeah, they're freestanding.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else on page 11? You are now turning the page to our last page from this section one. Building length and articulation, any comments here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's again a design guideline, not a zoning.
Right. Okay, anybody else? No. All right. That concludes the Planning Commission's preliminary review of sections 2 and 3. Anything that staff wants to comment on or talk about before we get back onto our agenda?
Just clarification of the extension that you mentioned. So all the overlay districts have a dash, something that's an extension, because you'll have a base and dash. So RS-OTH.
Okay.
All right. Everybody take a breath. So let's move on to the director's report.
Well, first, I'd just like to say, two sections down, way to go, Planning Commission. It's a great review. With the faster speed, we recognize that your staff report will be more detailed because we will be answering your questions in the staff report, as Ms. Wells said earlier. So we'll try and get that out as soon as we can. I just want to note, we've got two commissioners signed up for the Planners Institute. And so that should really actually be, I took a look at the program. You should have a good time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of really good sessions and information. Yes?
Yeah, I'm going under a different association, so I'll be there also.
Oh,
you are.
Okay, great.
Somebody else is going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, man.
That's wonderful. And then we've been asked by our legal department to see about your availability for a special meeting on March 7th. I'm just raising it now so you can check your calendars. I'll have Wendy send out a email request so we can see if we can get that nailed down. And that's for an actual business item. There will be no zoning discussed that evening. And that's all I had tonight. Mm.
Mm. What okay. Business?
March 7th. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go to commissioner's comments. Commissioner Maynard.
One question was just for the March 7th, since it seems you know what's on that agenda, can you tell us what that's going to be?
It's still formulating. Okay. We're not exactly sure, but because of we've released the Planning Commission dates as the really central part of the zoning ordinance review,
We've been told, we've been telling other staff in the city that if you have a real item, like a business item, that we're going to need to find a special date. And so that's all okay. we know for now.
Okay. And then I have two other questions. So one, we have the new SEIR that was handed out. Can you talk a little bit about how that process overlaps with the zoning process? Because I know this, I think, is due before the zone, we'll be able to get through the zoning code. So can you just talk a little bit about how this overlaps?
I don't know, Ms. Wells, if you would like to jump in there.
So we have had some questions about why we released an environmental impact report before we have reviewed thoroughly this draft. First of all, the regulations require that you know, once you have formed a framework for a project description or you have a basic project description, you need to start your CEQA process. And then through that environmental process, it helps refine your project description. So typical development starts off with a design, and then we start evaluating the impacts in an environmental impact report and release it before you have seen the new development, for example. So that's sort of what we're doing here. So we're reviewing it concurrently as we, or the public will be reviewing it concurrently as we're reviewing this public draft. If something changes dramatically in here, when we take it to hearing, we would be then doing a CEQA addendum. You've probably seen those before with your development projects. That would evaluate the net change that's being proposed in the draft that is taken to hearing. So I hope that answered your question, and that we, you know, have a hearing coming up, an environmental hearing that's required by the regulations to look at the adequacy of the environmental document.
Okay. So will that end up, that's one of the Planning Commission meetings that will be that hearing, or that's a separate meeting?
That's a separate meeting.
Okay. So the Planning Commission won't see the SEIR directly. We'll go to that meeting as attendees.
You will ultimately. In order to make a recommendation on the zoning ordinance, you have to first take action on the environmental document. So you would first make that recommendation about whether or not to certify the environmental document, and then you would take action on the zoning.
So you've got this wonderful workshops list that I really appreciate. Where does this appear on the workshops list that we would then be voting on this one?
It would be at the actual hearing, which we don't have scheduled yet, on the hearing on the document. So yeah, that would be bundled with your draft that we give you that's an underlined strike through from what you see from here.
Okay, so we'll vote on it actually after we're done with the zoning, but the public's got to get their comments in first.
Right. Yes.
Ah, no.
And it's also important to note that most people here are very familiar with project EIRs. This is a program EIR, one of the other types of EIRs that are allowed under state law.
Okay.
And it's I don't know the best way to describe it. A project is really looking at the environmental impacts of a specific thing. This is a little more fuzzy because it's programmed. So I know a lot of people have a tough time when they are used to reviewing project EIRs and they go to program. And we've heard that from the public already. It's a very different animal.
All right. And then I have one last question, which is, so I know that this series, and maybe I should have asked this last time, but I'm still sort of learning about this process. So so this is a workshop, which is different than a normal Planning Commission meeting. So are there any differentiations we should know about the fact that this is a workshop versus a normal Planning Commission meeting? How does that change it that we're using the word workshop?
Well, the only item tonight that was a workshop was the item that we just completed. So the rest is whatever it says on the agenda. So, it'd be consent or a discussion action or a workshop, which is just a little bit of a more informal structure with a little bit more flexibility on how public comment might be taken, for example.
And where we don't expect a decision to be made.
Right.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm glad to know that we're still going to allow some other business to move forward while we're spending our time on this. But hopefully we can still, I still would vote in favor of taking a little more time to, you know, move through this process as opposed to the schedule we currently have.
And I'm taking your comments back up the chain.
Thank you.
So.
Commissioner Daniels, anything to add?
No, sir.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Mr. Chair, by way of ex parte disclosure, which I guess we should have done a little earlier, I did have a conversation with Mr. Ken Alker. He had responded to me from last meeting talking about land use zone versus district. And it was in the context of he was looking at, and I brought this with me from the general plan, the land use plan map. And he was just cautioning me that maybe land use zone and land use plan, I still like the land use zone idea. But he had some other interesting observations. He has a parcel that is single family and agriculture, and we're not getting into that. But the land use plan had one designation, and apparently the zoning for those two parcels is different. And so he was very confused, and I'm just wondering if staff at some point could help him out, because I was confused too, just talking to him. But anyhow, just heads up, you might be hearing from him.
That, just so you know, that is an active application, and we're working with Mr. Alker.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, so it comes to me. So we obviously changed style here during what we were doing. You know, from page by page walkthrough to kind of pushing through, open it up. Anybody got a comment? Move on. You guys have any? Are you okay with that? Obviously, that moved it faster. We didn't have the same level of comment that we had before. Not that we have to exclude that, but you know, just getting a feel for what you think about that. Because we're going to want to kind of proceed on the next one with what we think is the most effective way of doing it. So as we go through this, we may again stumble on something that speeds us up or slows us down. I certainly welcome those comments as trying to be the chair, and I'm sure, or you can make them to staff, either way. But don't withhold those if you see that the process that we're taking is good or bad for what you think we're trying to accomplish here. So we make sure we're including everybody's opinions.
And if I can just add, the next section is 234 pages. We do not expect in any way, shape, or form that this will be done in one, two, or maybe even three meetings. So this will take some
schedule
time.
Schedule it for one, and we'll be right back.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, you got goals.
Chair, could I respond to that? I think just one thing, going back to the clarification of the workshop and that it's supposed to be a more flexible structure that allows more communication. I do think perhaps, especially if we're going to go through, you know, tonight we went through 3 hours or more of comments on the section, it might be good to have two public comment periods or a little bit more openness for the public to make comments at different stages. Like for tonight, it might have been nice to have public comment before part two and part three, or if we could break it up in some ways just so they could give a little bit more participation in the process. I just worry that since this is a workshop, we're very limiting their commentary.
Did you perceive anything lost? I mean, because we did get public comments on both sections, mm-hmm. Some of it detailed, mm-hmm. some of it more general. What did you perceive that was lost by that?
Because the public has been told ahead of time that it's a three-minute limitation, and I know you very generously tonight extended it for a couple of the folks that were commenting to a bit longer, but because ahead of time they had to prepare based on 3 minutes, I think there were a couple people that mentioned, okay, I'm only going to mention my top concerns. I suspect there were some other concerns and commentary that they had that we lost because they came in with the expectation of only being able to give 3 minutes. So it's just something I'd like to think a little bit more about. If we're doing this as a workshop, that might allow a little bit more public comment than we normally would allow in a business meeting.
I would just like to add that we are spending a lot of time already with interested parties and specific groups with specific concerns, and hours with them. So I think when you do get some folks who just want to talk about the top concerns, you could always ask them if they've met with staff, because we are generating pretty significant comment lists from different groups, and this is going to continue throughout the process.
Commissioner Fuller. Yeah, and if, you know, as much as I appreciate all the comments from the public, if they could provide, you know, a thorough list of their comments in advance, then we would have them, and they could highlight them you know, at the meeting, but we would still already know the depth of their interest in detail. It would be very valuable to us. Thank you.
Okay.
I do echo that the written comments are incredibly helpful because, as you discuss, you have very long meetings with the public, but we're not getting all that incredible feedback that comes in with those hours of meetings. So I'm looking for something in between the 3 minute and the multiple hours you've spent that we can get more of that commentary from the public directly. As Planning Commission, I think it's very helpful to hear that public commentary.
All right. Everyone's had a chance to comment. Everyone's, thank you all for your participation, your support, your patience today. Meeting adjourned. Oh, wait a minute. I did it again. I'm supposed to ask for a motion to adjourn. Can I count on you, Mr. Daniels?
Yes, motion to adjourn.
Second?
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It looks like we're adjourned. Thank you very much.